Once I rose above the noise and confusion, just to get a glimpse beyond this illusion. I was soaring ever higher, but I flew too high.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is March 28th, 2016. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern to midnight. If you're listening over another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call number is 701-801-1220. Participant code is 118-676-260. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Again, that's questions at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support National Liberty Alliance's effort to save America. Okay, and also you can help support us by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, we'll look first at God's Word. Scripture reading for tonight is Proverbs chapter 15. I'm going to be reading verses 1 through 14. Proverbs 15, 1 through 14. A soft answer turneth away wrath, but grievous words stir up anger. The tongue of the wise useth knowledge aright, but the mouth of a fool poureth out foolishness. The eyes of the Lord are in every place, beholding the evil and the good. A wholesome tongue is a tree of life, but perverseness therein is a breach in the spirit. A fool despises his father's instruction, but he that regardeth reproof is prudent. In the house of the righteous is much treasure, but in the revenues of the wicked is trouble. The lips of the wise disperse knowledge, but the heart of the foolish doeth not so. The sacrifice of the wicked is an abomination to the Lord, but the prayer of the upright is his delight. The way of the wicked is an abomination unto the Lord, but he that loveth him followeth after righteousness. Correction is grievous unto him that forsaketh the way, and he that hateth reproof shall die. Hell and destruction are before the Lord, how much more than the hearts of the children of men? A scorner loveth not one that reproveth him, neither will he go unto the wise. A merry heart maketh a cheerful countenance, but by sorrow of the heart the spirit is broken. The heart of him that hath understanding seeketh knowledge, but the mouth of fools feedeth on foolishness. That was Proverbs chapter 15, verses 1 through 14. Okay, I don't really have much to say tonight. We've gotten out all of our letters and papers to the sheriffs, and that went out in the mail last week, this past week, yeah. And so all of the sheriffs and the governors have our papers. We've read both the sheriff's paper and the governor's paper the last couple of weeks. And we're going to start following up on that. There's a lot of things going on, and as it becomes more solid, we're going to start talking about it. Just a lot of alliances with different groups of people that are compatible to what it is that we're doing. And but as we're, you know, more sure in where we're at with those things, then we'll start talking about that. A lot of activity going on out in Oregon. I don't know that we're ready to really speak much about what's going on out there at the moment. I know Gerard's got his finger on a pulse out there. I don't know if he's here yet. Gerard, are you here yet? But before we move on, is Gary here yet? I don't know if Gary got any questions or anything.
Yes, I'm here.
Gerard's here. Okay. Before we go over to you, let me just see if Gary's got any questions. Is Gary here, Jan?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Are there any questions? That we can hear you.
Well,
any questions that have come in?
Well, I'm trying to understand some of the wording of the questions, so I'm going to give the one I can actually read and understand.
Okay.
It says, "No victim, no crime" is a common phrase we hear in common law. Although I agree with it, is there any court cases, especially Supreme Court cases, that substantiate this? Something to use in a court filing rather than what appears to be one's opinion.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, no victim, no crime is a common law precept. It's a principle. There is, and you can find that in Black's Law, I know that. You can find it in quite a few places. But I think there are at least one, maybe more, that I'm aware of, and it could be quite a few of them, cases, Supreme Court cases. I can't think of them at the moment. If anybody can think of it, maybe they can bring them up.
But doesn't the precepts come from the Constitution, though, John?
Well, no. Precepts ultimately come from God. These are principles and precepts.
I mean,
you know, common law.
Isn't there something about, you know, for every crime, there must be an injured party?
Yeah, corpus delicti, I think, is the phrase that is used for that, if I recall.
It's called a maxim of law. A maxim is what you're looking for, John.
That is what I was looking for. I used the wrong word.
I said
precept.
But it's a maxim of law. And another one that fits very closely to that, which I ran through my case that John helped me with, was with no contract, you have no cause of action. They come into court with no contract. It's just like having no victim, no crime. No contract, no cause of action. It fits very closely. And a lot of what they're doing is the same thing. You know, you're looking for examples, but meanwhile, it's built into the law. And I'm sure if we go in there, you'll find Supreme Court rulings that state that, look at, you don't have a victim here. And those red light cameras that take your picture, one of the reasons they're unconstitutional, they've been getting overturned, is they can't prove anybody who was there. They can't prove who the perpetrator is, and there is no victim. There's nobody. That camera can't testify to being a victim, and they have to throw it out. Anyway.
Yeah, remember, maxims are self-evident truths. I mean, that's the key to common law. Really, it's self-evident truths. Can you think of a case, where there is no victim and yet they can call it a crime? I mean, you can't really commit a crime against the government per se. I mean, you can, for instance, if someone could, steal from the government, which would be stealing from the people. Of course, that's not a victimless crime. There are victims there. It's just a principle or maxim, shall I say, which is an undeniable truth. You know, for every injury, there must be a remedy. I mean, who could argue that? So those are what maxims are. But I know we have quite a few lists of different maxims up on our website, and you can find these maxims that we just talked about up there and many, many more, hundreds. But I'm pretty sure there is a court case, and when I'm not talking anymore and when Gerard takes over, I'll go search through it and see if I can't find a court case that actually quoted that for somebody to have. But bear in mind, even though you get a court case that quotes that, it doesn't mean they're going to listen anyway, because their end results of every case they do, it seems, is already pre-planned before the case even gets going. They already know how it's going to end. And are already preparing on what they're going to take away from you, or what kind of punishment they're going to apply on people. They
I've
don't
heard
care about truth.
Yeah, I've heard that the cases are monetized.
Yeah, they don't care about truth. They don't care about anything. The end result is all they care about. They've got a game they play, that every time you bring something up, they've got something to respond to. And, you know, they love to make things secret. And they love to just shut you up and threaten you with contempt of court. If you continue to disrupt the court like that, you know, we're going to put you in contempt of court. Whatever. They're not interested in truth. They're just interested in getting to wherever they want to go. I don't see much hope for the people that are in charge right now. I really don't. Let's see. You know, there is a little more time for them to repent and start working with the people to give back to the people what is rightfully theirs. That they have stolen, but the time is coming. It's coming very, very short, and when it comes, it'll be too late. And I won't lose any sleep over their punishment. Certainly not. Anyway, anything else?
Well, not that I can understand the context, so I'll just read it straight. Please, it's someone who knew that a case was dismissed by a judge during jury selection procedure. I don't understand any content with it. If you can get anything out of it.
Yeah, I don't know what that means.
All right, then I'll pass. I'm all set.
Okay. Let's see. Gerard, do you have anything particular to share about anything out west or anything that we can talk about at the moment or not? Or should we move right over to Brent?
Well, we have so much stuff going on that I don't even know where to begin there.
Yeah, we may not be ready to talk about too much.
No, I think once we get some stuff cemented, we'll be able to come back with a very exciting meeting next week that will be filled with a lot of news, because things are moving very quickly. A lot of connections are being made, and it's very exciting to see what's going on with the different groups that are coming together and that are supporting National Liberty Alliance also. And we're lending our support too. So it's very exciting, and I hope to give you more specific information next week once we cement some of the things down that we're doing. And I wanted on that other thing about the jury selection thing, where they said it was dismissed or whatever. That happens all the time. And I don't know if this is what that person's talking about, but a couple times I got called for jury selection, and what happens is you go through this whole thing, and they're selecting the jury, and the next thing you know, everybody leaves the court, the case is off, because they settled in the hall. The lawyers got together, and they got it right down to jury selection before somebody decided to, you know, they pushed a deal. They never want to go to trial if they don't have to. They never want to put anything on the record. And so they love
it. And they have no authorization of that. If it is a true crime, and only the grand jury or the trial jury could make a decision on that. And, you know, grand jury could make an arrangement, but certainly a prosecutor can't make an arrangement. Although they do. They've been doing it for 50 years or more now.
Well, in a civil case, the parties can settle. It's up to them.
Well, absolutely. Civil
if
case.
It's a civil case, then that's
often,
the one I...
How often do you get a jury with a civil case, though, you know?
Well, I was on the jury twice with a civil case, and both times they called us off because they settled. Because ultimately, look, it cost everybody money. Both sides cost money. You go to trial, have an extended trial, the price tag, you know, because these lawyers, they charge you one price while they're playing with you, and another price when they get into court. So... That's more incentive to settle, you know, before court. Anyway, so that's my two cents. I don't know if that was an accurate answer for that, but I know it happens all the time that they cancel the action while they're doing jury selection. Now, if it was a criminal case, I guess they'd do the same thing, because if the prosecutor is making the deal instead of the grand jury. And you see, in our system, that deal would be made long before there was a jury selection. You know what I mean? Because the grand jury would make it. They would say, look, we'll allow you to restitute this or whatever if the party agrees, and you'll sign the contract. So anyway.
Okay. Thank you, Gerard.
Yep.
All right, Brent, are you here? *6 to unmute you if you came in through the code I gave you.
I'm here.
Okay. Okay, Brent Winters is going to speak on tonight. I think he's going to speak on jurisdiction. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay, and Brent Winters is the author of Excellence of the Common Law, and your website is Common Lawyer. What is it, commonlawyer.com?
www.commonlawyer.com.
Okay, go right ahead, Brent.
Well, I want to make a mention before I start, because I may forget otherwise. Presently on Liberty Works Radio, Liberty Works Radio Network, they're going through my, I think it's about 40 hours of presentations, clause by clause, blow by blow, of Magna Carta, which I had done during the 800th anniversary of Magna Carta last year. And I believe we were just in, the recordings are now just in the first few chapters. But if you tune into Liberty Works Radio, I'm on, I think, three times each day for an hour. And you can check the Liberty Works Radio website for the schedule. But the subject I've been asked to discuss this evening is jurisdiction, and I appreciate the opportunity to do that. Jurisdiction is the holy of holies in our common law country. Now, that's not to say that it's observed. That's not to say that courts or lawyers or anyone else take time to understand really what jurisdiction is. I'm sure some do. But as I begin, and before I say much more, I will give you my clearest, most hammered out definition of jurisdiction that I've come up with yet. and I believe it's accurate, or I wouldn't give it to you. It's the most succinct way to put it I've found. This is the definition of jurisdiction. Jurisdiction is the right to act respecting a given matter. Jurisdiction is the right to act respecting a given matter. Now that means that if you have a right, I try to mention this as often as possible, if you have a right is a responsibility. It is not something that is selfish. Popular discussions among legal scholars have made it a selfish thing since the emphasis and the stress courts have begun to put upon the Bill of Rights since about 1936, 1937, the Caroline Products case. But rights are responsibility, and jurisdiction is the responsibility, the right to act respecting a given matter. Now, the action that a person may choose to make within their jurisdiction may be forbearing to act. There's power in that too. But again, most fundamentally, jurisdiction is the right or duty or responsibility to act respecting a given matter. For instance, a judge in a court has a scope of jurisdiction. If it's a state court, his scope of jurisdiction is relatively unlimited. If it's a federal court, the scope of his jurisdiction, at least according to our law, is his jurisdiction is limited to matters arising under the Constitution of the United States. And that's pretty narrow. But in both cases, each of those kinds of courts has a jurisdiction. That means they have the right, the responsibility, the duty to act respecting a given matter, whatever, for example, comes before the court. That means the court must say yes or no or this or that. They must do something, even if it's no more than throwing the case out for lack of jurisdiction. And courts sometimes do that. Throw the case out because the law does not give me jurisdiction over that matter. I'd like to drop a footnote here and mention a power, a jurisdiction, a right to act that Congress has, that if they'd use it, as they have in the past, use it a little more, it could eliminate a lot of our problems. And that jurisdiction is this. Congress has the power to remove a whole lot of courts from any jurisdiction at all. In fact, the Congress of the United States has the power to remove the existence of every federal court in our nation, with the exception of one, and that's the Supreme Court of the United States. Congress has that jurisdiction. They can reduce the number of federal courts in our country, except the Supreme Court, down to maybe four or five courts or a dozen courts or one in each state, or they can increase the number of federal courts. That is in their absolute, unfettered jurisdiction, their right, the responsibility to act. Each one of you and me, every member of Adam's race, has a specific jurisdiction also. Traditionally, at common law, that jurisdiction is called his peace. And the king had his peace, and every man had his peace. And to violate the peace of another man was to create an action against the violator of that peace. If you violate the peace of the king, you've committed a crime. If you violate the peace of another man, you may have committed a crime, or you may have just offended him and given him a right, a jurisdiction, to bring a civil action against you. Again, jurisdiction is the right, the responsibility to act, to either say yes to action or no. That means to act. Now, when I say every person has jurisdiction, it is God-given, by the way. Every person has a God-given jurisdiction. And we have a list in our Constitution. Our Constitution, the Bill of Rights, lists some of those jurisdictions, those God-delegated rights to act or to forbear from acting. And those rights, we call them fundamental because those are the ones we recognize are given direct from God without any intermediary. Direct from God without any intermediary. And you can see them there in the Bill of Rights, for example, the right to speak, mentioned, Amendment 1, and the right to remain silent, the flip side of the right to speak, the right to remain silent, mentioned, Amendment 5. Now, both of those rights are part and parcel of a single jurisdiction you have over your tongue. You have the unfettered right, and not only that, the power, to either speak or not to speak according to what you believe God's duty given to you is at any given moment. You either have to say yes or no. You either have to say, I will talk, or you have to say, I won't talk. Of course, I advise clients, when it comes to the police, you don't talk to them, because everything you say, not may, but will, be used against you. And you'll never convince them, by the way, that you're innocent if they're investigating or trying to accuse you of a wrongdoing. Don't waste your time. All you're doing is giving them more power. But you have the governance, the right, the jurisdiction, the bailiwick, the authority over your tongue. I mentioned three things here, three words that are substantially the same, synonyms, with some different stresses of meaning, but overlap mostly. And those three words are jurisdiction, right, and authority. We could also add the word I mentioned a while ago, bailiwick. Jurisdiction, right, and authority. Well, that's what jurisdiction is in a few examples. And I want to mention now the source or the fountain of all jurisdiction. The source or fountain of all jurisdiction is God. The source or fountain of all jurisdiction is God. And if you say it's anything else, you have entered the realm of the evil empire, and you're helping them along. And if you stay silent about that, the truth and liberty are losing ground. Because if you don't recognize that all authority, all jurisdiction, and all right find their ultimate fountain, their ultimate source in the God that has created all things, then you leave open a vacuum that allows the entry of men. And in most countries, authority is not recognized to be from God, but it's said to emanate from government. And then there are religions that say that there is a priesthood through which all authority flows to men. That's wholly untrue also. There is no institution, no government, no institution of government, or either, or priesthood, or elitism, or professors, or judges. There's no nothing, no ancestors through which God gives authority to men, except he doesn't give it through an intermediary. All authority that God gives to his people comes direct to them from God. And that's the fundamental, one of the fundamentals of Christianity. And that's why we say our walking papers as Christian men and women come from the Bible. Our freedom comes from the Bible. That means it comes from the will of God, because he has all authority and jurisdiction. I don't say that just spinning off words. There's some flat statements that God gives us. Romans, specifically Romans, Paul's letter to the Romans, chapter 13. Paul says this, let every soul be subject to the highest levels of jurisdiction. I'm reading from my own translation. I believe most of the translations are exceedingly wanting. As a matter of fact, they're perverted on purpose. And I believe also, I have good evidence, that Of course, the King James Bible twists this, and they do it, the King James translators do it, to support the power of King James. But this is an important passage that's being used against Christian people in our own country. Even our own government is taking it and trying to say what they believe it means, and training pastors to cooperate with FEMA by trying to persuade them what this means. Romans 13 says this. Let me read this again. Let every soul be subject unto the highest levels of jurisdiction. Well, that's getting pretty close to God right there. Now let me read the next sentence. The highest levels, for there is no jurisdiction. That means no authority. These words translated jurisdiction could be translated authority, right, jurisdiction. And they are often translated that way. And by the way, amazingly, in the popular French version, French translation of the Bible, they are translated with the French word authority. Authority, and that's right. It's not power he's talking about here. He's talking about right. And there's a difference between right and might. The King James says power. That's not what the word here. It says power each time and then adds it two times when it's not there. And I'm not down on the King James Bible. I like it and use it. But I recognize also, as much as I can, where there are problems. Let every soul be subject unto the highest levels of jurisdiction. For there is no jurisdiction except under God. God. And the delegations of the jurisdiction are arranged under God. Delegations of jurisdiction are arranged under God. So God is the source of all jurisdiction, that is, all authority, all right, and all that he delegates of jurisdiction and authority, right, he arranges them under himself. And the jurisdiction that you have, direct from God, think of your fundamental rights. Among those, some of them are mentioned our Bill of Rights. But God has arranged those and given those to you. And then he has given you a specific jurisdiction. For instance, if you're a father, a husband, a mother, a wife, each father in the world has a similar jurisdiction, but he doesn't have the same jurisdiction because he has a different family. But that jurisdiction came to him direct from God. And it cannot be taken away. Indeed, he himself cannot get rid of it. I've told my children that a few times. I wish I could just forget all this and throw it to the wind and walk away, because sometimes it's difficult. I don't want to have to do what I'm doing, but it's my authority to make a decision in this case. God gave it to me, and I don't have the right to throw it aside. I don't have the right to disavow it. I don't have the jurisdiction to get rid of my jurisdiction. Verse 2, whoever is the one arraying battle against the jurisdiction, that's God's jurisdiction, God's rights, matches the arraigned delegation of the lawgiver. Whoever does this, whoever goes to war against God's jurisdiction, is facing off, squaring off, drawing a line in the sand with what God has set in his delegation of jurisdiction. For instance, if you have jurisdiction as a wife or a mother, and you do, and by the way, it's different than your husband's. If you have that jurisdiction and someone tries to rob you of it, take away your motherhood against your will, rob you of your children, as is happening in America today, then Paul the Apostle here in Romans, writing to them, says the person that does that may not understand it, but they're squaring off with God. A very dangerous and unadvisable thing to do. He always wins. And the ones having so matched, that means squared off, shall receive to themselves damnation. Damnation. What is respect for the other fellow? Peter the Apostle says, honor all men. That means respect. Love the brotherhood, fear God, honor the king. But honor all men. That means respect all men. What does that mean? That means this. That means you do not violate. You do not usurp. You do not encroach upon their God-delegated jurisdiction. When you see police officers and government lackeys and useful idiots of all shapes and sorts, bureaucrats, encroaching, usurping, violating God-given rights, busting down doors of houses without warrants, for instance, shooting people without authority, arresting people without warrant or authority, those folks are interfering with God's delegated jurisdiction. That means rights. When you violate the rights of other people, Paul the Apostle says here, you shall receive damnation. It's an interesting word, translated damnation. It's an old word, an old Anglo word. It translates a Greek word that means the sentence of punishment, the infliction of loss, krima. It's just a flat word meaning sentence of judgment. They shall receive it. Now, that doesn't help us for the moment, though. For the moment, we may suffer. We may suffer also, but keep in mind the source of all jurisdiction. Your responsibility, my responsibility is twofold. Number one, do not encroach upon the jurisdiction of another. If you're a government employee, you better be blamed careful. I'm giving you warning because God has given it to me. Do not encroach or try to stop other people in the exercise of the jurisdiction God has given them, because you'll face God over that. That's what needs to be said, and don't do that. Number two, each one of us has an authority, a right, a duty, that's what a right is, to defend the jurisdiction that God has given to us. If God has called us to do a certain thing, that old word calling is important. And it means God has called you. What has God called you to do? Again, let's be simple about this. If you are a father, if you are a mother, a husband, a wife, if you are a child that has a father or a mother, you have a duty, a right, authority. You have a duty to do certain things respecting that relationship. Your duty toward your fellow countrymen, your duty toward the law of God, and the only true law is that of God. I find that our Constitution, in my humble studied opinion, I've been through it, I find that it's consonant with the law of God, substantively consonant. If there are things that are out of line, well, then they shouldn't be there. I do question a couple of things in our Constitution, but I'm deeply impressed with how close it is and how much it tracks with the law of God written in the Bible and the law of God unwritten in creation. Well, that's some words about jurisdiction. We are stewards of our jurisdiction. It is most important that we limit the jurisdiction of government. How do we do that? By squaring off with them? No. Squaring off in a blow-by-blow contest will get you whooped. They've got more force than you. They've got a practical monopoly of force and violence right now. That's not what we're to do right now. What we're to do right now is limit the jurisdiction of government by exercising, learning first our own jurisdiction individually, recognizing it, and asserting it. And again, that comes to simple things. Start with the Bill of Rights, and you can see those supported in the Bible. But it's all there. The right over your tongue, the right respecting your family, your husband, your wife, your children, and your right as a countryman, as an American. You have rights. That means responsibilities, certain things you're supposed to do. For instance, if you're a member of the militia, you have a twofold duty, armed defense of your land and jury duty. Know your duty. Know what jury duty is about. For instance, that's your jurisdiction if you're impaneled on a jury. Well, that's enough for this evening. I forget what time I started, but I figure I've been talking for 20 minutes. John, And thanks again for giving me a little time.
Okay. Thank you, Brent. All right. We're going to go into Q&A, and Brent will take questions for 20 minutes or so. Let me just click on the button here. Hey, anybody who has a question or a comment, you know, talk with Brent. Hit star 6 to get into the Q&A. Okay, we've got, looks like Scott. Let's take our first caller, Scott. Go right ahead, Scott. The question for Brent. Let's keep it down to one question so we can get through all the callers. If you have a second question, you can get back in line. But go ahead, Scott.
Sure. this is one I was going to direct to you, but to him is even better since the night's topic is jurisdiction.
Okay.
I'm in touch with a Native American Arapaho who was telling me that they're taking their land like crazy. They're building condos. She can't even swim in the lake she's swimming. And I was wondering, if they come out into our jurisdiction, what law do they go under? I mean, they've been fighting us forever and losing, and they just, you know, don't know where to turn. So what would be their jurisdiction? I mean, they're on a sovereign nation right now, but they're taking it.
Well, I think I've heard, it's kind of garbled a little bit, but I want to ask a question quickly. What state are you in?
Well, I'm in South Carolina, but the nation that she's in is in Oregon.
Oh, well, yeah, that's, I have, if I'm still on, am I on? John?
Yeah, go right ahead, Brent.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, that's a common problem, and I have friends and clients in that part of the world. I've even, at one time, represented some of the tribes out in Oregon in a case back east that had to do with a business situation. But they're becoming empowered. Even here, where I'm from, in the Wabash Valley, they've instituted suits in federal court as far away as East St. Louis to try to take the homes of the chairman of the county boards in local counties to put up as precedent to take more land. Down in Texas, the Comanche, in years past, not too many years ago, have been able to recoup reparations from oil production from past years and decades. And so the money is flowing into them in ways it had not before. I can cite other examples. They're taking control of water rights, which are real property rights, oil rights, mineral rights, and also, of course, fish and game. I know some people, I won't say where, but they are surrounded by Indian trust land, and they're no longer, because they're surrounded, although they have their land in fee simple, they themselves can't kill game on their own land, but everyone else in the state can if they're only, for example, not surrounded, but if they have Indian trust land only on three sides of them. So the sensibility, if you try to make sense out of these Indian cases, I heard Supreme Court Justice Blackmun once, heard him speak back in Missouri when he was alive, and he made the comment, among many other unusual things, that Indian trust cases give him the biggest fits, or did when he was alive, than any other kinds of cases he gets. And what the courts are doing in these Indian rights, land rights, real property rights cases, they're just coming up with ideas out of their heads. They're not following much precedent. They're giving over rights is what they're doing. And what they're doing is saying, the white man took the rights, and we're going to find a way to give them back. And it's causing confusion of property rights from all the reports I get to my friends. So if you're asking what jurisdiction do these Indian tribes have in this particular circumstance, I don't know. I know that, for example, I read about the Hell Gate Treaty of Montana, the Hell Gate Treaty, which was signed back in the 1850s with the tribes there in the Flathead Valley, among others. And the Hell Gate Treaty had one purpose, and it's stated in the treaty. The purpose of the treaty was to assimilate the red man into the white world. the red man, even way back then before the Civil War, the war between the states way out west, was willing to sign a treaty and be assimilated into the white world. Of course, it never really happened, although people tell me out there you can't tell the red men from the white men anymore because they're so intermixed, and it's got some of the tribes worried. They're trying to remedy that, but without success. They want to retain their purity, but it's not working. But even in that case, the courts now have consistently, even though that treaty is in full force, and by the way, as such, it has the same authority in federal jurisdiction as the Constitution of the United States. As you know, treaties arising under the Constitution or pursuant to the Constitution have the force of constitutional law. But they have abandoned the purpose of that treaty, and the laws that are being passed now and upheld in our courts have absolutely nothing to do with the purpose of that treaty. And the purpose is not that bad. I'm not answering your question very clearly. You're asking for a black and white question, and I don't know what the answer is when it comes to most of these, as Justice Blackmun put it, Indian cases.
Okay, well, I appreciate your input. Anyway, I do know that they are they're impoverished. They've taken everything. I mean, they're living in trailers now out there.
Well,
go ahead, John.
Yeah, once we do bring justice back into our courts, it'll be their courts too. We'll have to give them justice. So, right now, just like us, they're suffering from the same problems. They're not getting justice in the court.
I'm sure that's true. Well, there's even when they get what they want, they may not be getting justice, and it may hurt them in the long run. And that's happening to a lot of people in court. The mention you made about many of them being impoverished, I found that to be true also, but others are doing quite well. For example, if you go to a Crow agency in Montana, you'll see that they're not doing that well. And there are a lot of other places like that too, but there are some where they have, I'm not sure, I'm not in the inner workings of how they're making money, but they're making money, and the tribes are putting away a lot of money. Now, it may not be getting out to the people the way it ought to be, but there's money there for scholarships, and people are fighting over trying to establish the fact that they are of red descent. When I say red, I mean Indian, red man descent, so they can get scholarships for their children. I have had clients that have tried to do that and fought hard to do it because the money was there and the competition was stiff.
Okay, thanks, Scott, for your question. And
thank you, John. I'd like to thank the speaker. Thank you.
Okay, next caller is 678 area code. What's your first name and your state?
This is Eric, Georgia Eric.
How are you doing, Eric? Go ahead.
Good, thank you. Real quick, I wanted to give a shout-out to Rebecca and to have her tell her story, come on a little later, about going to the federal courts, if she would. But Mr. Winters, you mentioned earlier the question that I had. Actually, you touched on it a bit, and you said you have the right to speak and you have the right to remain silent. And John had said one night, I think it was on a Monday night call, and it made so much sense when he said it, but I'd never considered it before, you know, due to my wealth of ignorance. But he said that our public servants don't have the right to take the Fifth because they have a duty to speak as they're serving us. And then also, I think this ties in with, there's a place in your book where you mentioned that the Christian seeks to learn the rules and then to obey them. But what the Christian is missing, as implied in that, or even stated outright, is that they don't understand the relationship. And it's the relationship, it's the independent contract that this stuff is weighed upon. And I think that bears about how our public servants don't have the right to be silent because they have a duty to speak. And as John has said once, 1,000 times, if he said it once, is when you have a duty to speak, silence can only be equated with fraud. Can you talk more about the contracts and why our public servants shouldn't be able to take the Fifth?
Well, when traditionally our courts have said and continue to say that the Fifth Amendment applies when a person is in real accusatory danger. I had to search for the exact words the courts use. Real accusatory danger. Now, when are you in real accusatory danger? Well, you're in real accusatory danger increasingly more time than ever. Because everything that a fella does today, and as someone recently wrote a book entitled it, Three Felonies a Day, and he argued that most Americans commit about three felonies a day. And I do not disagree with that. I could go into detail on it, and I could probably think of felonies that most of you that are listening have committed just today. And the reason for that is Congress and the states have passed so many laws making so many things crimes that aren't crimes, that God never gave them jurisdiction to make crimes, that it puts all of us in real accusatory danger. That's why I advise my clients, do not talk to the police. Just don't do it, because you don't know what you may be accused of. It's just safe. It's one of our last weapons, is the right to remain silent. But do government employees have the right to remain silent? And I would have to say, when it comes to being accused of a crime, or they think they're in real accusatory danger, I have to say that that right has to be there. Now, when the courts say that someone isn't in real accusatory danger, and the courts will sometimes say that, then they'll say, you've got to talk, you've got to answer the questions. We're going to put you under oath, and you've got to answer the question, or some particular question. And if you choose not to do that, you disagree with the court and think you are in accusatory danger, as Susan McDougall did, for example, a number of years ago, the judge has the power to put you in jail. It's not a crime. He doesn't make a felon out of you. He just says, I want to let you sit in jail. And when you're ready to answer the question, you can get out anytime you want. You just have to tell me you're ready to answer the question. That's the kind of a problem it creates for us. And John may disagree with me and know something I don't, but from my understanding, every breathing person, no matter if he's a useful idiot for the bureaucracies or not, he's still a creature of God, and as such, he has power over his tongue and a God-delegated duty to exercise that jurisdiction. And what's the difference between a government employee that's committed a crime and a non-government employee that's committed a crime? Once they've, for example, let's be obvious, let's say they've committed an unjustified killing called murder. Do they have the right to remain silent if they're in danger of being accused of murder, innocent or guilty? And I have to conclude, when I think it through, that yes, they have that right. And if someone else listening wants to respond and disagree, I'll listen too. But that's my understanding of it right now. Now, Hillary Clinton, for instance, she's in the news, and she decided not to turn over government property. Well, any court in the country, emails, any court in the country would have said, if it had been a private citizen in that particular case, and by the way, that falls under the Fifth Amendment right to remain silent, the turning over of documents, the production of documents. Any court would have said, you got to turn these over. Why? Because you're an officer of a corporate body called the government of the United States. And by the way, the government of the United States has always been a corporate body. There never has been a time when any government of our United States, state and federal, have not been corporate entities. They've been viewed as corporations, even if they don't have charters making them as such. The law looks at them that way. And as such, those emails were fair game. Now, I've been in court, and I've argued in court both ways. When people come in and the government wants documents that are corporate documents, even trust documents, I have a little trouble with that. That's a different situation. That's not a corporation. It's not a corporate body. But a corporation, boy, the federal courts never miss a beat on that. No, that's corporate papers. You've got to give those up. You do not have the right to remain silent. You have to produce them. You don't have to talk about them, but you've got to produce them. And in this case, every government employee must turn over the documents that pertain to their business, that pertain to their business as employees of the corporate state. So I would say, yes, in that case, they don't have a right to remain silent. But as far as talking, that's a different matter. Both of those fall under the Fifth Amendment, but in different ways. And but now that you've raised the question, the way you've raised it in the context here today, I'm going to think that through some more.
Well, I'll give a position that I have on this. And, you know, the Supreme Court has ruled numerous times that when a individual, particularly a judge or anybody of authority, has a duty to speak, their silence would be a fraud if they didn't. The key thing I recall particularly, for instance, when some individuals from the IRS were called before Congress and questioned, and as they were being answered, given questions, now they were stewards. They were given certain authority. They had certain jurisdiction. They were coming to make a report on what was happening or what Congress wanted to know about. And at some point in time, some of the questions they refused to answer, and they pleaded the Fifth. That's the position that I'm talking about. They have a duty to speak. If they're given a certain stewardship and they have a certain authority and a certain jurisdiction, and they are working for us as a, you know, one of our representatives, as a servant, they have a duty to speak concerning whatever it is that they have control over, and they have to give the truth. Now, of course, they could refuse to speak, but then it would be the duty of someone else that, you know, really Congress should then, of course, turn to the next person next to them. Okay, well, you answer the question, and that may incriminate the person who's refusing to speak. But the bottom line is when they have a duty and they've been given and they're acting under a certain responsibility, a certain jurisdiction, they have a duty to answer to and give account of their stewardship, of what it is that they're in control of. And that's the position that I hold.
Those are good reasons, John.
Thank you, gentlemen. I appreciate it very much. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks for the question.
I want to bring up one other thing with the Fifth Amendment. There was a time when it was popular that when anybody that took the Fifth Amendment, they were accused of, they must be guilty because they're not answering. And that's not necessarily true. But, you know, a lot of times with police officers, when they're questioning you and you say you take the Fifth, well, they assume that you must know something or that you're guilty right off the bat. That's how they view that.
That's the nature of people, and but I agree with Brent on that. You don't talk to these people because they're there to pin it on someone, and you can never trust what's going on. So, okay, let's take the next question, next person. Let's see, 256 area code. Give us your first name and your state, please.
Hey, John. Hi, Brenda. It's been quite some time since we spoke. This is Keith in Alabama. I was just absolutely love listening to you speak. This is kind of a little off topic, but I wonder if you could touch on a little bit on oaths, like where you swear an oath, take an oath. You know, because a lot of people contest to this. You know, where you like when you're doing. Affidavits, you swear an oath, tell the truth, or whatever.
Yes.
You may have touched on this already.
Well, are you asking what is an oath? Is that kind of the...
I'm asking, you know, what I'm asking is, you know, a lot of people contest this because the Bible says Christ says...
I see. Yeah, I see where you're going. Well, yeah, they do. The Quakers are most well known in America for doing that, and that's the reason the affirmation is allowed.
I love that story about the Quakers.
Yeah, they didn't want to disenfranchise the Quakers because they were a well-known and populous group, the Middle Colony of Pennsylvania. The Quakers, though, because of their false views of the Bible, have caused us a heap of a lot of trouble, and not to mention our own penitentiary system. They're the fathers of our penitentiary system. And de Tocqueville, who's quoted so often, the French aristocrat that came into America back in the early part of the 1800s, he's quoted for all the wonderful things he says about America, but he said a lot of things that weren't so flattering also. And the other thing that's not said about de Tocqueville, a young aristocrat, a Frenchman, was sent here specifically by the aristocracy of France to investigate and report upon this newly formed system, never before seen in the world, that the Quakers had started in Pennsylvania called the penitentiary system. But because that wasn't your question, I'm going to back off of that, but it's a favorite subject of mine because it's become such an ugly thing throughout the whole world. Well, the Quakers also said that God doesn't allow us to take oaths, and they'd cite that passage in the Sermon on the Mountain when Jesus said, do not swear at all. Well, that's what the translation says. That's not really the import of the words there. What Jesus said there is, do not swear, and I'm going to give you the Greek word, olas. Do not swear olas. Omicron, lama, omicron, sigma, it was O-L-O-S, olas, and it's closely allied with our word, our English word, whole, W-H-O-L-E. And what Jesus is saying there is, do not swear in a broad way. Do not swear wholly. Do not say, I swear I'll never do this, or I swear I'll always do that, or I swear I never did do anything like that. His point there is, when you take an oath, crank it down tight. Put boundaries on it. Be careful what you swear, because as the Old Testament law says, and this is his point, God will require it of you, period. And that's his point. Now, I can get further in the Newer Testament. I can show you at least a half a dozen places. I just found another one today that I'd never really noticed, where Paul the Apostle swears an oath. Well, if Jesus Christ is saying that John the Apostle, he swears an oath also. And by the way, the writings are tantamount. Some of their epistles are tantamount in many places to affidavits, because they're sworn written statements. And John says over and over, I saw this with my own eyes, and I witnessed to it, and I call God in to confirm. Paul says that a lot. Well, that's an oath. And when Paul says, Megenenta, translated God forbid, there in Romans and a few other places, he's swearing an oath. These are no small matters. Jesus Christ never forbid the swearing of oath, but he did do this. He said, you be blamed careful how you do it and what you swear to, and don't be too free with it. And never, he said, never under any circumstance swear to anything, as the Old Testament law says, never swear to anything but by the God of heaven. Never swear by his footstool, never swear by his footstool, which is the earth. Never swear by heaven. Never say, heaven forbid. That's evil. Jesus Christ said, never do that. Never say, as all children we used to say, swear to God, hope to die, stick a needle in my eye. That's evil. You don't make those kind of oaths. And I repeat them here only to point out to you more specifically what God says and Jesus Christ confirms that we are not to do. So the oath is something a fellow needs to be careful about. But it's not forbidden. Indeed, it's very important. Paul the Apostle says that, or the writer to the Hebrews, if the writer to the Hebrews was Paul, the writer to the Hebrews says this, in the courts of men, an oath ends all discussion, ends all debate. Well, that's true at law still today. If somebody puts in a motion for summary judgment, and you put in an affidavit saying, now, wait a minute, no, that isn't right. I'll swear to this, and I'll testify to it in trial. Well, then that ends the matter. You're going to trial. You've got now conflicting oaths, you see. And where oaths are conflicting, we go to trial before the jury. But the oath is important. I'll just leave it at that and say it is. God does permit it under his terms, which means swear only by him and no other, no created thing. And be very careful and draw the boundaries tight on what you swear.
Well, amen. I'd like to pipe in just a little bit on that. God does tell us to perform our oaths. So obviously we are going to take oaths from time to time. Obviously when you go into a court of law and make an affidavit, you're making a sworn oath. But I think in the sentence right there, or in the paragraph where Jesus speaks about this, he also says and concludes with, let your conversations be yea, yea, and nay, nay. So it's yes and no. Don't swear to God on your conversations, just like Brent had said, you know, haphazardly, just in passing, and just swearing about this. Oh, I swear to God, this is absolutely true. That's what he's talking about.
Well, that was very, very clarifying there, Brent and John. I appreciate that.
Thanks. Okay, let's take on next caller. Okay, it is Mac, Crystal Mac, 203, Connecticut. You got the mic. Well, you're still muted. Hold on, let me unmute you here. Did we lose you? We lost you. I don't know what happened. Okay, we lost that caller. Fell off the board. Maybe she disconnected. Okay, let's take our next caller. 978 number. It's the area code. Give us your first name and your state. 978.
Hi. Hi, I'm Linda from Massachusetts. Brand new member. Grateful for you guys.
Go right ahead, Linda.
Great. Hi. Quick question, and if this is a talk of just a lesson time, then you can answer it any other time you like. But I'm wondering, we have a lot of other, like GMO mothers, we have a lot of other groups that are huge that I want to reach out to and direct them over to our site. But when I go to the site, it says clearly 5,000-something members is the top number. I'm wondering if there's somewhere it can say groups so that we look bigger, because when people begin and they are learning this, they might not feel secure because there's so much federal backlash about it that they might not feel like the number's big enough to join. So if they don't know the total number, or if it says also many members of groups are also part of this group, it would feel more secure and be easier
right.
to get people involved.
Yeah, that's probably a question for me, and I'll respond quickly on that one. Well, we have literally tens of thousands of people that visit our site on a monthly basis, and they don't all join. We have a lot of people who visit us. Most of our pages are available to anybody. There's very few pages that are private. The key part of our membership, of course, is to take the courses. You know, we require people to actually sign up to take the courses. So we do have a lot of people that visit us and that come often and learn from our site and don't necessarily become members. We are one of the largest liberty groups out there, if you want to call us a liberty group. We're really more of an assembly than a liberty group because we're really working to bring people together in order to get a job done, which is to take this nation back and deal with subversion against the United States of America collectively across the nation from every state. But the key thing is to build up administrations inside of every county and then be available for them for any questions that they might have, any advice and so on, until they're trained and they learn and understand what exactly it is they have to do and how they can perform their duties. So that's really what we're all about. We did make a conscious decision to open up what we have going. We have 5,000 at this very moment. We have 5,206 members. And we have, of those memberships, we've got a big leadership here. You know, we have constituted every single county in the United States, and we have a presence in every single state of the union. We have an address and a seal for every state of the union, and we're unified on the national level as a unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. We have 111 state coordinators. Now, there are 50 states. And we have 109 federal district leaders. There are 90 federal districts. Four of them are territories, so we don't really – I mean, we'll work in them if people joined and wanted to take up a leadership role there, but to my knowledge, nobody has done that. We have 8 national coordinators, and then we have 2 founding members who founded National Liberty Alliance. So we've got a pretty big group. We're pretty well organized, and I think it's something in the open. As far as activity is concerned, we probably, percentage-wise, probably one of the most active groups out there, percentage-wise, per our membership. And again, if you look at any other Liberty group, very few Liberty groups have 5,000 members. But we just want to be open, and that's why we do it that way.
Excellent. Thank you so much. God bless.
Okay, thank you. All right, let's take the next person. It's a 980 number. Please give us your first name and your state. What question do you have for Brent?
Yes, this is Carol, a.k.a. Israel, calling out of North Carolina territory. One of the county coordinators here in North Carolina. I had a question for Brent as pertains to the jurisdiction in going into court, is it wise to establish the jurisdiction of the court at the first proceedings as to challenging the jurisdiction of the courts?
Yes, but if it's a criminal prosecution, it'll probably just irritate the judge more than anything, because he'll the way, of course, they get criminal jurisdiction is through an indictment, a grand jury giving them a true bill, or by information, depends on whether it's state or federal or what the method is in your particular jurisdiction. They'll, if they've got that, they'll just presume jurisdiction. And but of course, you can challenge jurisdiction in a criminal case on the basis of statute of limitations. For instance, if it's an IRS case, the IRS must prosecute within 6 years to the day after the act that they allege was a crime. So if it's beyond 6 years, then the law says that the Justice Department has no jurisdiction to prosecute the case. And if it is a jurisdiction question, as I'd said in the beginning, jurisdiction is the holy of holies. And if a court doesn't have jurisdiction to exercise discretion and act, even if the trial's over, jurisdiction can be challenged and say, wait a minute. You don't. The Congress says the federal courts have exclusive jurisdiction over RICO actions. I think I remember that being the case, by the way. I was in one once. And if that's in a situation like that, when a state court tries to take jurisdiction, goes through a trial, impanels a jury, and convicts somebody, 20 years later, it's lawful to come back and say, wait a minute, Congress never gave you jurisdiction to do this in your state court, and you've got to throw the whole thing out. So jurisdiction is important, and it is important to challenge up front. It is important also that you know what you're doing, and you're not taking advice from somebody that is coming up with crazy ideas and charging a lot of money and making a lot of money, getting people in worse soup than they're in already. But yes, jurisdiction, for example, personal jurisdiction. If you've not been served personally a complaint in a civil case, a non-criminal case, then the court can't take jurisdiction of the case until they get that, or of you, until you've accepted or received that service. I can bring up something here quick that I'd thought about while I was talking. Criminal cases, as I'd said, jurisdiction is given to the court through permission of a grand jury or the information of a prosecutor if that's the way it's done in a particular state. That's criminal jurisdiction. That's hard to avoid, by the way. I mean, once that happens, it doesn't make any difference whether you're served any piece of paper called process or not. But if it's a civil case, a non-criminal case, and somebody's suing somebody, the person that's being sued, the court has no jurisdiction over that person until, or the matters pertaining to that person, until the opposing party serves that piece of paper called process. When that piece of paper hits him personally, within usually wingspan, his reach, then there's jurisdiction taken over the case, and that means over the affairs of that particular fellow as it pertains to the case. So that's jurisdiction there. Now, if you can avoid service of process, and let's say you've not been served, and the court drags you into court anyway on a non-criminal matter, at that point you can challenge jurisdiction by saying, wait a minute, the Constitution of the United States says that I'm entitled to due process of law, and if there's anything fundamental to due process, it's personal service of that piece of paper, personal service, and I didn't get it according to the terms of the law. You can challenge it right there, and you ought to, as quick as possible. When it comes to court, anything you want to challenge, it's always better sooner than later. And there are some things, if you don't challenge them at the first hearing, they're waived. So you make sure right up front that you say, none of your rights are waived. I waive none of my rights, whatever they are, just say, I don't waive any of them. And, of course, you demand, if it's a civil case or a criminal case, you demand trial by jury at your first opportunity before the court. You demand it. You don't request it. You see, I demand trial by jury because that's a fundamental right. That means God delegated. And I can show you in the Bible where that's part of God's government also. But it's important to challenge jurisdiction, yes. Just make sure that you've got good advice on what you're doing. Because if you don't have a color of a complaint about it, it will irritate the judge. And as they say, judges are the 13th juror. They have much sway over the jury, whether we like it or not, whether it's lawful or not. They do.
Okay, thank you. All right, I see that Crystal Mac is back, so I'm going to go back over to Crystal Mac. I guess she had dropped off. Let me open her mic up. This is Crystal, right?
Yes, can you hear me?
Okay, we can hear you. Go right ahead. And this will be the last caller for Brent, and then we'll move into our normal open forum. But go ahead, Crystal.
I sent over the affidavits to Linda, and definitely look at it. And on that, it should throw everything of mine out on it. It's recorded in the town clerk, and it has the volume and page with my deed. Okay, so they will be in for a big surprise when they get that. And also, you know, we got into the colleges and in the high schools to get the kids and stuff signed up so they can start learning this.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. I'm hoping to have a meeting soon with all the people who are putting in affidavits and dealing with different problems that we may be able to do habeas corpus for. And we do have a plan for what we're talking about right now for the mortgage problems. But as soon as we can talk about it, which hopefully is sooner than later, I know I wanted to do that this week, and maybe we still can. But let me, yeah.
I want you to take a look at it, because this application will help, I guess, everyone. Because it was certified, they stamped it in the town clerk's, there's a volume and page and everything, and it's got it sealed on it. They had to file it.
All right, well, you got it all to Linda, right?
Yes, I did. So
okay.
I made sure.
So Linda will bring that up to me in our conversations, and we'll discuss it. So she'll add it to her list of things that we need to talk about and see where we're going to go with it. But, yeah, I do know that you and others have formulated some good things, and I think use some of our stuff and some other things and are using that in the courts, and it's given you some good leverage. I believe that's the case, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. I'm aware of that, so...
Okay.
And we definitely want to share that with everybody that as soon as we can, so they can have the options to do the same thing that you have done and hopefully have the same success that you're getting.
Well, as I said, you know, but they still think, they said, well, we're going to be foreclosed on. And I said, okay. But again, I was listening to the gentleman earlier. And but when they go back and print it out, it's all on my legal documents.
Right.
You know,
well, we're gonna be able to help you, I think, with that, maybe. But I don't want to get into that during a Monday night program. But I think, what was it, Tuesday nights or Wednesday nights? Tuesdays or Wednesdays, we were meeting at 3 o'clock. Do you recall which day that was? We haven't done it in a little while because we've been so involved with what's going out in, out west. We just haven't been able to get back to that and work things out. But was that Tuesday or Wednesday? Tuesday? All right. Well, look, we'll see. I don't want to say that we're going to have a meeting tomorrow because that's too quick. So we'll probably be next week. Hopefully we'll have a meeting and we'll let people know where we're at, what we're doing, and what's going on. And, of course, if we get moving before that, Linda will be contacting people and letting them know, those people, that we can start moving into the system if we can get that going. But it's all a matter of really getting someone to take over the job that I was doing, you know, because we do have the process set up to be able to receive the paperwork to do quite a few different things. But I have been unable to actually go through the reviewing process, you know, looking for the dots and the tittles, so to speak, and then go through the process of putting it together and mailing it out. It just took too much of my time that I needed to put someplace else. But I think we have somebody I'm going to try to talk with them tomorrow, and or the next day, but hopefully tomorrow. And if they're ready to go forward to take on that work, and they feel confident, and we'll check their work, and then we're going to get moving again. Okay. And
also,
but we will have some more stuff for you on what you're talking about. I have put together some stuff, and maybe we want to at least give it out to people that can use it on their own.
All righty. And also, we still got, because last week, because I got a lot of things going on, I got some illness going on in my family. We still got that on standby for that TV interview. So
okay.
I didn't talk about that, so I got to get back to him. But we were just, the day that he wanted to see me, I couldn't, and vice versa, you know. But I will try to do something this week.
Okay,
all righty.
Okay, thank you. All right, well, we'll end that. Thanks, Brent, for your time, and you know, hit the star six, mute up. But if someone puts something forward for you and you want to pipe in, feel free to pipe in.
Thanks, John.
Thank you. Okay, let's take our next caller. And Gerard, are you here to pick up on the calls?
Can you hear me?
Unfortunately.
Okay, well then, I guess you're going to have to listen to that.
We can hear you. I'm not going to touch anything. You hit the next button and you got it.
Okay, here we go. I hope it doesn't blow up.
Yeah, really.
Okay, you've been unmuted. It hasn't told me who you are yet. There we go. It says
573.
573, right. You've been unmuted.
Yeah, hi, this is Buckley from the Show Me State.
Yeah.
And, well, I just, one of the, in my opinion, one of the most outspoken voices on the power of the county sheriff has been Richard Mack.
Yeah.
And I just wondered what NLA's relationship was with Richard Mack. Are you guys working with him, or is there a relationship between you and Richard?
Yes, we're working. We were working with the CSPOA right now on educating the sheriffs, and we're talking about getting them to use our materials. So that's pretty exciting. Richard's still investigating because he doesn't really get his head around the importance of the grand jury being that symbiotic relationship between the sheriff and the people. And, you know, we have lots of sheriffs on board right now coming that completely understand it. So he needs a little bit more of looking into it to understand, you know, where that stands in history and in the law, which it absolutely does. When you're used to running subpoenas and indictments from a grand jury that gets its permission from the judge and the prosecutor, and you've been doing that as a police officer for years, it's very hard to get your head around the fact that, look at 25 people coming together under the name of a grand jury, and they come in with a presentment. You have to take it because that's the law. That's what it is. This system was designed so that the people could regulate it. And they can't tell us how to do that because the grand jury is not connected to any other branch of the government. Now, and when you read U.S. versus Williams, it becomes very clear. And we've had all kinds of people trying to wiggle out of that. They go, well, that's just the federal. It has nothing to do with the state, which makes absolutely no sense at all. So, in other words, we're only allowed to keep the federal government under scrutiny and not the states. So all these things are working out because as the system gets worse and things are more egregious, it becomes absolutely clear how you need this system. And we got lots of sheriffs coming on board, and I'm convinced that Sheriff Mack too will see the efficacy of, you know, the whole idea behind the people holding the government to task without asking the government's permission. I mean, does it make any sense that we got to go to that agency that is wronging us and ask their permission that we can take them and punish them or throw them out or whatever we need to do to straighten them out. I don't think our forefathers were that short-sighted that they believed that the people had to ask the permission. You see, that's the whole government going back to a king or a dictator. It was never meant to be. And the whole business of nullification, jury nullification, a lot of people understand. I know Sheriff Mack understands the right of jury nullification.
Right.
You know,
right.
that's a stalwart of American justice. Is if the jury nullifies it, it's done, and there's no double jeopardy. So the next step is do we need to ask the government's permission to hold their feet to the fire? And the answer is absolutely not. So, you know, I mean, I know that, it sounds like it's chaos. Anybody can come together. But that's not how it works.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong.
The system and not the common law. Not the common law courts that we're talking about, the common law grand juries. That's what he needs to be educated.
Correct. And correct me if I'm wrong, Gerard. CSPOA, which is the organization that Sheriff Mack founded, but CSPOA has verbally agreed to come on with us, correct?
Yes, yes.
And so we've got the commitment from the organization, the CSPOA, and we're starting to work with sheriffs. I don't know that we want to get too deep into this yet because we have to iron out some of these things, and one of the things we have to iron out is Sheriff Mack. You know, so but he's coming along, and people are talking to him about it, and they are looking in, to my understanding, of using our education that we put together for the civics course and for the Constitution, and we'll put some other courses up there soon, we hope, and we just take it from there, you know.
But I
would just like to just make one other point. You know, the first known grand jury, as far as coming out of England is concerned, back then I think it was called Britain, and I guess it still is. I'm not sure exactly how that works into things. But in any event, really, we see it in the Magna Carta. And they came up on their own accord. They came out from the people. They are the people. And they made a decision, and they went to the king to straighten him out, to put him back into where he belongs, because he had totally left his jurisdiction and has went way, way out there. And so they brought him back and reeled him in. Now, of course, what they did, the way they did it was kind of wrong in the sense that they threatened his life. And I think that they, by the rewriting of that and rewording of it a little later on, I think that was sort of a repentance for that they would not threaten the king's life again or his family's life and so on and so forth. But they would seize his castles and do everything else necessary if he didn't behave himself. But in any event, therein is the first grand jury that we know about. So that's our example, and that's what we have to go off of. And if the people have to ask for permission to come together as a grand jury, then we're not free at all, are we?
And the other point is Lysander Spooner, who said that if the government picks the juries and the grand juries, just by the people they don't pick, they're stacking that grand jury. So that's a problem. You can't have a government official, a prosecutor, or any other government official for that matter, asking juries and grand juries questions and then picking them for the task, especially when it has to do with government corruption. They're going to pick the people that are sympathetic, that either get their money from the government or whatever.
Well, Gerard, do you have any examples of actual common law court cases that the NLA has been involved or successful in?
Well,
we have cases, but not common law cases, because we have not been able to get a common law court open. But we have one in their courts.
Okay. Well, we use common law principles. Look, at when the judge does something wrong, we give him a writ of error because we're working in a court of record and that type of stuff. That's using common law principles. Nobody's ever heard of somebody giving the judge a writ of error, and we do that on a regular basis. You know, so that's using common law. You know, look, we go into court and we kill the presumption that we're in their corporate world when we by our heading, when we say in this court of record, you know, we accept your oaths and your bonds. That's it. You're accepting their oaths to the Constitution, the fact that they're bonded and they got an oath to the Constitution. At that point, if the judge doesn't chime up and say, well, I'm not under the Constitution, or I don't have an oath, or I don't have a bond, you know, and if he doesn't, he's committing perjury and he's committing fraud.
And therein is a duty to speak.
Right. So what happens is a lot of times they don't understand either. If you read our paperwork, you'll understand that we're educating everybody, including the judge. So until they let us come in as the tribunal and the judge as the magistrate and we get in our court, you can't say that we have a common law case. Although years ago they had them, there were lots of common law cases. One of the reasons they don't like common law pleadings is because they're very long and they're open to interpretation, and they're not written strictly. There's always the exception. You know what I mean? If when you have a statute, it's statute number 65473, and then what the judges do is they lock it down even more, and they say, your only job is to see, to tell whether this person broke this law or didn't break the law. Never mind about whether it was a good law or it's being misapplied or his intent wasn't to break the law. You see, under common law, all those things come in, intent. You know, what was the intent? Was it an accident? You know, and also under common law comes in restitution. Can he restitute? Do we really have to go to trial? Does he have to go to jail? Can we restitute? They don't like any of that stuff because what happens is it takes the control of the money out of their hands. When people work their problems out amongst each other in a civil, lawful, godly manner, they can't make money on it. And that's really the reason they don't want it.
Right. Well, I remember reading something on your website that said the last common law court record was back in like 1963. So up until then, we did have common law courts. Is that correct?
Well, I don't know that statement would necessarily be true. You know, I'm sure there have been common law courts even after 62 or 63.
Yeah.
Right.
And I don't know that we have any knowledge of when or we could put our finger on anything particular. Or the only thing we could say for sure is this. I personally have never walked into a court that's a common law court, and I have tried to change it over to a common law court. We do when we go in and we state, you know, one of the people in my case of New York and in this court of record, we're doing this and we accept the oaths and the bonds. And now at that point, we just turned it into a court of record, and a court of record is common law. Now, if at that point it becomes a conflict because we found that we have to always do battle with the judge, and that's the problem. We can never get to the case because we're always fighting with the judge. The judge just doesn't want to permit this to go forward. And then we've come up with a new strategy, which is we're not going to fight with the judge no more. We're going to state it. We're going to give him our writ of error, and we're going to move on, and we'll take him and sue him for violating our unalienable rights. We'll take him into the federal court, and we'll have to deal with that judge there in that court. Usually it ends up they just throw us out of their courts, which for us is a win because really we're not in their courts per se to get anything from them anymore. We've learned that we're not going to get anything from them, but we're in their courts only to protect someone that is facing jail or losing their children or their home or something of that nature, or the IRS has come out after you in a couple of $100,000 or whatever it is, and to be thrown out of their courts is all we really – we're happy with that. That for us is a win. It's a win for them too because then they don't record it and they just expunge the whole thing and people don't even know that court case even existed. So there's nothing there. We did a case where we won against the IRS and they not only gave us a release of lien, but they also gave us an apology letter. So go figure that out. But after that – And we were suing them for money, but why stick the stick back into the hornet's nest once you're out of their court? So we're good with that. Walk away. Well, 6 or 8 months later, they used that court. The U.S. attorney in the same district used that case against someone else that I happened to know that was going into the court to fight the IRS, and they wanted to do it on their own. So, you know, they didn't ask particularly for our help. And I'm not even sure how that case ended up, but I remember him giving a call one time. They said, hey, they quoted your case against me, and they said that they threw it out. So you see how they use that case for themselves, and the whole thing was a lie, you know? Mm. Yeah, they did throw it out. It's true. It just fell away because I just stopped pursuing it. They stopped pursuing me, and everything just fell away, and then they just threw the case out. So now they make the thing, because remember, in that particular case, we initiated the suit against the IRS in order to beat them out before they came out after us, and then you ended up into their tax courts, and we didn't want to be in the tax court because that is more specific, you know, as an administrative court than the courts we're going into. And the courts we're going into are courts of record because they're Article III courts, and that's where we filed our paperwork, and we're holding the judge's feet, we're holding them down on a wire there that this is a common law court, and this is the way it's got to go. And he just got to the point, I believe, that he felt that he was in a jeopardy because he saw we'd sue anybody in his way, and we're going to sue him. There's no mm-hmm. doubt about we're going to go sue him, and I think he understood that. And I think he just didn't want to deal with that because he now was at risk, so he told the U.S. attorney, deal with this. That's what we presume. And,
so they call it a dismissal, but, if you can come to a Mexican standoff with the IRS, that's pretty good.
Yeah, exactly. So when they throw it out of court, they're not putting it into a different court. They're just basically saying it's dismissed.
No, they're letting you go. They're letting it fall away. They're dismissing the case. They're also abandoning their charges.
Well, bear in mind, the very first thing they did, okay, we only had one hearing on this case. We went in, and the hearing, we challenged the hearing. It was unconstitutional. There was no reason for us to be there. And then he was going to make some decisions. He said, you know, I'm going to make some decisions in 3 weeks. I'm going to decide on this, I'm going to decide on that, and decide on the other thing. And he said numerous things. And then 3 weeks didn't even pass by, maybe 2 weeks, and we got the release of lien, and we got the apology letter, and then we just didn't do anything anymore. We just let it go. And there was silence for 8 months, and when they dismissed and threw the case out, they didn't even send me anything. They just did it. The only reason I knew about it was it was brought up in another case.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was very kind of them to send you an apology letter.
I don't know how many people have ever gotten that, but, you know. Hey.
Yeah, we don't like to brag about it because they may get sore about that again.
Right.
Anyway, as far as we're concerned, it was a success.
One other question, and I'll let you go. Is there anything you can do with a DWI case?
Well, look at a DWI. Was there an injured party, first of all? Did somebody get hurt?
No.
So they're stopping you, and they're claiming that you're drunk based on whatever was at the scene. Look, we don't like to defend anybody that's drunk driving drunk, but
right.
We know how they operate, and we know what they do. And the fact of the matter is all those traffic courts are all illegal. They're all administrative courts. They're all nisi prius, which means they only have authority unless you don't agree. So, I mean, you can attack their jurisdiction on that. It's just the same as any other case. Just the fact that it's a DWI.
Well, here's a suggestion. Here's a
Correct.
Suggestion, but again, you have to know what to do with it, and that mm-hmm. become, and we're not here to really train or teach people these things because we're really here to win back our nation and deal with the
Correct.
Subversion problem and then get it back into the hands of the people, and then, you know, you can go back and talk with the grand jury and the administrations of the counties about these things and get them dealt with. But here's the bottom line on it. The Supreme Court never handles DWIs. It's always handled by a town court, a village court, a city court, or something of that nature. Now,
right.
In New York State, for instance, it's very clear on what a court of record is, and they very specifically say that the Supreme Court of New York State, which there is one in every county, they may call them different things in different states, but here in New York they call them the Supreme Court, that is a court of record, and the county courts are a court of record. Now, the town courts are not courts of record, and they proceed according to administration processes. So when you walk into that court, you're not getting due process. So you can really challenge the fact that they don't have the authority over you because they can't give you due process. First of all, you know, you can't come out after me for a crime without first getting a grand jury out there to give me an indictment. Now, they will or may go do that, and I've seen the towns actually do that. They call together some grand jury, and they give an indictment. But it's a puppet grand jury anyway. They have no authority anyway. It falls right back into the fact that they're operating under civil law and not under common law. So with that in mind, you can challenge the judge and give him a writ of error and then immediately move right over into the federal court and sue for violating unalienable right of due process because they have hijacked you into a foreign court. And that's a position that I would take if I had these kind of problems, and I've done it already that way. And so the thing is, though, is what do you do then? You know, now you know you have to have an education. You have to understand the processes, how things work in the courts. You've got to learn the court rules to some degree anyway. But the bottom line on all things, and no judge, and the judges are going to give you a hard time about this too, you know, I don't pay their $400. I refuse to pay their $400, and if they don't take my case, then I sue the clerk for rejecting the case, and then usually they take it right away. But at least that has been my experience. Now, the problem is you can't pay their money, you can't fill out their paperwork and go through the whole process because you're going into their court, which is a de facto court. You're really opening up a common law court, which has not been opened up for us. But that's what these federal courts are supposed to be. They're all supposed to be Article III courts, which is under the Constitution, under common law. So that once you get into that part and you get into the court, now you know all that's really necessary in any court. You could take a napkin and write up an affidavit on your napkin and take it to a notary and get it notarized and file it, and that's it. That's all that is necessary. Of course, that's very crude, but I'm trying to make the point. Right. The only thing necessary to open up any court case is an affidavit, and the United States Supreme Court has ruled on that numerous times and made that clear. That's the only thing necessary. You don't have to be astute. You don't have to know the forms. You're going to a place to get justice. You have a complaint. You have a problem. You have a situation, and you're going to that court to get it settled, and you have an unalienable right to have justice served on your behalf. And because you don't know, and they keep everything priestly. I mean, I remember trying to figure out the courts. We couldn't figure out the courts. We couldn't figure out how to get into the courts and write paperwork and do this. And everything was a mystery, and no one would talk with us. Nobody. Right. And until we found, what was that, Jurisdictionary. Wasn't that the name of it, Gerard?
Yeah, Jurisdictionary, yeah.
Yeah, we found that, and we learned how the processes work through that course. Okay, and that allowed us to get into the doors to start to see things. But we challenge all of the necessities of their forms. And remember, their forms are only suggestions, really. Although they think it's law, I remember going into a court case and crossing things out. And I actually changed the words. I took and deleted some words on it and redid the form so it had some proper words in there that I could use to make it clear that I'm coming in a court of record. And this is a common going to proceed according to the common law. And the lawyer on the other side, he just whined like a little baby. Yeah, he changed the papers and he changed the words, and you know they get all upset about that as if I can't do it. I don't need to use their form. Why do I have to use their form? All I need is an affidavit to walk into this room. But I'm going to give you the form, and I want to make it clear. You want to make it clear it's a case that's running under a de facto court. Well, I want to bring it back to where it belongs, and I want to make a case that's running a de jure. I want a common law court. This is the court of record, and we're going to proceed according to that. It's my choice of venue. I'm the one filing the papers, and this is where I'm at. And if you're going to take criminal charges against me, it's still a court of record because it's still ultimately my venue. Because I'm being charged, I have a right to be heard in a court of justice. So that's the argument. But again, you know,
it's not
all that easy, as I'm saying, right. But it generally is. It's still enough to happen.
Is a DWI charge. And I refuse to take a breathalyzer test, you know, and I refuse to answer any questions. Every time the patrolman would ask me a question, I'd say, I'm not an attorney. You're asking me a legal question. I can't answer that question. I'm not an attorney. And that's all that I said. And
so they have absolutely no proof of you of any DWI actually existing.
No, no.
Okay, well then that's a pretty cut and dry case if you were able to get it to that point, and they have nothing. Again, it's a violation of your unalienable rights if they don't give you a court of justice, and that you're probably in a town court. It's not a court of justice.
Yeah.
And that's a Nisi Prius court. Nisi Prius court does not have the authority or the power to fine or incarcerate. They do all day long, and the sheriff is complicit in that. So, you know, he's actually breaking the law along with them. They're all doing it ignorantly, though. And so we'll give it to them for that, at least to the sheriff, and to some degree we'll give it to the judges until it's time when they put their foot into the ground and they dig it in and we're ready to arrest, then it's going to be too late. They're going to go to jail, and whatever the trial jury says, I'm good with.
Well, is this something that you guys can help me with, or something that I just need to learn myself?
Well, the only thing we might be able to help you with is a habeas corpus. So you can call, go click on the button on the right-hand side of the frowny face.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's an upside-down happy face. And
right.
Put sign help. You can click on that and follow through the process of your court case and request for us to do a habeas corpus. They've been frozen at the moment because we've been too busy out west. But we may be opening that up soon. We're working on it.
Okay. All right. I can do that. And then you just need to feed, I mean, I would just at that point send you my records and...
No, we don't want records. We only want what we do want. We do want what do they call that paper in the court?
The docket.
The docket. Yeah, we want the docket. And any kind of a paperwork that's in that docket, we'd like to get a copy of it. Usually they'll refuse to give it to you, but, you know, you can ask for it. But it's mostly for information purposes. And as far as, you know, who's arresting officer, what's their name, what's the address, who's the prosecutor and the judge and all that stuff. And any documents they have, we'd like to see. But the basic thing is to get all that information and then get an affidavit from your perspective, and you want to tell the truth in the affidavit. And what we're challenging ultimately is their jurisdiction. They don't have it. No one has ever answered a habeas corpus that we've given because they can't. To answer the habeas corpus makes them guilty of a crime because of the answers they're going to have to give. Either they're going to lie and they're guilty of something, or they're going to tell the truth and they're guilty of something.
Okay.
So they're stuck between a rock and a hard place. So, and when they read it, they know it, and they get very angry over this. And it's not that they're going to let you loose easy. It's a battle. The sheriff start working with us, that's when we're going to start to get some real traction in those areas. But, again...
Right.
You know, bear in mind, right now at this moment in time, they're frozen, and we're trying to unfreeze them now as far as doing habeas corpuses. Everything's kind of at a standstill because we have so many things going on, not only around the nation, but particularly out in Oregon. There's a lot of stuff going on, and our attention is there.
Right. Okay. All right, gentlemen, thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. I'm going to unmute the next caller here. We're coming down to our last hour. Okay. Well, I think it's coming back. Let me see who's there. It's not telling me. It says Crystal Mack, but I don't think that's correct.
Yeah, Crystal Mack already spoke. I had unmuted her earlier because she came back in. So go to the next caller. Hit the next button again. Okay, there you go. 434. That's it.
Okay, you've been unmuted. Go ahead. Yes. Who is this? Name and state, please.
Yes, Chris. Virginia. I wanted to answer one of the guy's questions earlier about the where to find the Indian stuff. You can go on the Yale University website, and they have a project called the Avalon Project. And that's Avalon, Avalon, like aviation. The Avalon Project is very defined. It's a very in-depth site. right. They've got every document. Their goal is to recover every document, every existed in the history of mankind, I think, is their goal. But I remember several years ago looking at treaties and stuff on that site, and it's still there. I just checked, but it's a very deep. It doesn't look like a complicated site, but it is. It's very deep, and but he could go to that site if he's interested in looking up the treaties. It has everything. I mean, everything is stored on that site. I you know, the Communist Manifesto, you name it, it's there.
Okay, and that's the Avalon, A-V-A-L-L-N. You're coming in very kind of garbled.
The Avalon Project, and that's the Yale University.
Okay.
And it's law school, Yale University, so the stuff is very accurate.
Okay.
You can really count on it. The other thing was, I had been doing some research on a few things. I just wanted to let people know. I don't know if everybody's aware of it, but anybody that's interested in claiming their Social Security, apparently Congress has hidden a bunch of stuff that they had loopholes for themselves, and people are using it, so they tried to close them up. And so we're closing these loopholes, and those loopholes are going to be closed. They hit them in an omnibus bill without telling anybody. And these loopholes are going to be closed on the 1st of April. You won't have access. So anybody that's intending to claim it, you know, that's in the Social Security age group, 62 years old, whether you're using it or not, you can grandfather them if you can go on and find out what those things are. But there's a lot of benefits that people are entitled to that you won't be able to get. There's a lot of things, apparently, that people have no clue of. So I just wanted to make that known. Also, if you want to know definition of persons and individuals and so forth, I found an interesting article in the USC Title I. Really bears worth reading. Title I, that whole section is just really awesome about a lot of things that we're aware of, that, you know, when they're changing the meaning and definitions of words and so forth, like in Title 26 non-positive law. But it also tells you in there that if it's not positive law, then it has no force. And it says it right in those in that Title I. That's a really good step to read. Spend some time in Title I. Well worth it.
Okay, thank you for all that. I'm going to move to the next caller now. Oh, I guess somebody got... Yeah.
Hi. I wanted to get into the question of jurisdiction, but of course I missed it.
Gerard. What? Throw it out there. Throw it out there. We'll answer it. I think Brent is still there.
They've been trying to serve me, you know, to evict me.
Yes.
And they have not been able to serve me. I have not opened the door. I have not received any papers. And I'm wondering if we don't have a contract.
Well, look, they do have a method of serving you if they can't get you. They'll put it in the newspaper, and they'll consider you being served. I mean, look, people have tenants that run and don't want to get served. And after, if they can prove that they've tried X many times through the mail or with a process server and they can't get you...
They've never mailed anything to me.
Well, registered mail is the only way they can prove that you got it, or a process server. But I know that if they can't find you, like if they can't get a hold of you, and they can prove that they've tried, you know, and there's a method that they use, and I think part of it is they put it in the legal announcements, and they get you anyway. Believe me, that's not going to be, just because they can't serve you is not going to stop them forever. You know?
Well, I've been trying to get a hold of my lawyer to find out if there's any, I don't want any surprises. But they haven't filed anything in court.
Well, if they haven't filed anything, then there's nothing pending then, right?
because don't they? According to the court, they say that if they to get the eviction, they have to file. They can have to serve me first, and then they have to file.
Yeah, they have to serve you with so many days. Usually, it's 30 days, and then they file it in the court. And then I guess after once they prove that they served you and 30 days has gone by and you haven't answered or you haven't started a case or whatever, at that point then they go to the sheriff and the sheriff gives you a 3-day notice before he comes to evict you.
Yeah, please don't even go there.
Yeah.
Please, Gerard, I need to stop that.
Yeah, well, you know, look at the sheriff may not be willing to. You've already had conversations with your sheriff, and that's a good thing because he may not be willing to come out and do it, especially if they haven't physically served you. He's going to be maybe looking for an excuse not to do it.
Well, there's so much criminality out here in Suffolk County, you can't believe it.
Yes, I can.
Yeah, the sergeant of the sheriff has been indicted for taking money and working on the golf course. But that's not the main story. The main story is that this guy is in charge of a gambling unit where they gamble and decide who is going to get what case. What judge is going to get what case and who's going to be assigned what. And that's my judge. That decided my case some time ago. So I'm wondering if that's going to nullify everything those judges decided.
It could. It could. That's how Brett talks about jurisdiction. If they got a problem, then they don't have jurisdiction. It doesn't necessarily have to do just with the court you're in. It has to do with his eligibility to hear the case. And if he's got a conflict like that, then he's not eligible. You know, look, it seems to me that all this law is built around golf courses. It's funny you should say that, because that's where the lawyers and the judges all hang out and do their talking is over a game of golf. Maybe you should become a caddy. You can get all the dirt on them. You know, these guys are always on the golf course plotting our demise.
Yeah, well, apparently in this case, this guy went gambling, and they got together and gambled and played poker. And decided who was going to get what case and who was going to make how much money. And that's how they decided, you know, out here who got, and this guy apparently was in charge of all the judges. He was the head of the conservative party out here.
Well, let me tell you something, Maude. They've been looking at cases like that for years. If you don't think that the lawyers get together, your lawyer and the opposing lawyer, and they have discussions about, well, how much money's here. They look at the whole case, and they pre-decide what they're going to do. They've been doing it for years. Of course, now they're so blatant that they're taking bets on the golf course. That's how low we've sunk, you know. But they've always looked at the case and smacked their lips and decided how much money was here, which would determine how long they would drag the case out and who would get what. You know, it's like they're drawing lots and shooting dice on your clothes before you're dead. You know what I mean? Who's going to get your coat? You know, and that's what they do. You know.
So is there no way of calling their jurisdiction if one finds out? Because even the attorney general out here is about to resign.
Well, I think you know, if you got such widespread corruption that you can make bones about it, you could call into question the judge's eligibility because he's involved in this or that. But you want to be careful because when you start accusing the judges of crimes, he may, you know, I don't know how you do that without getting contempt, you know.
Well,
I mean, you gotta go on the golf course and tell them I know you're involved, you know. That's where they do it, on the golf course. But you know what I mean? It's like you have to be careful of how you put that together, you know. I mean,
well, one has to wait until this guy gets caught and exposed was the fact that he's been, you know, that he has been assigning the judges to the cases, and based on gambling. A friend of mine is in, knows this and is exposing it.
Right. So until he gets convicted, you can't really call it in. Once it's public knowledge, then you can sit there and say, I understand that he's this, this, and that. You can say that in public then.
What was the last conversation you had with the sheriff?
Oh, I haven't talked to the sheriff since then, but this is his, I think this is the lieutenant we spoke to at the time when we called up the sheriff.
Oh, yeah, I remember him, yes.
Right. Why don't you do this?
His name is Lieutenant James, huh?
Why don't you write a simple affidavit? Nothing complex. It's very simple concerning the fraud that took place. Don't get into a lot of detail. Just write the fraud that they've taken your land without due process, without going through the courts, and that you're just notifying the sheriff of that. And maybe we can file it with the sheriff on your behalf and make another phone call to him and let it be known. Now, it's in your court. These people tried to throw this woman out. You can't go out there and throw her out of the house, and obviously no one else can either, because only the sheriff could do that. And therefore, now you know that you can't do it because she has been defrauded and she hasn't had a day in court. Because they're using the town court still to throw you out? Is that what they're doing?
Well, they haven't done anything, but they came and served and served and served.
Right,
and
but you were called into the town court. Whatever happened with that? Remember, they were trying to do an eviction
in the
town.
The first one, they had to withdraw. They were caught with a fraudulent service, and they withdrew it with prejudice. And since then, they tried to serve me again, and I wouldn't even open the door, and they didn't leave it on the door, which is what they're supposed to do.
Right. Well, I would do a simple affidavit, something simple for the sheriff to understand, that you've never had your day in court. These people illegally, fraudulently change the papers, because they have the ability to do it. They're a mortgage company. They do what they want, and they're getting away with it. And you've never had your day in court concerning this. And now that they've changed the paperwork, now they're trying to say that I'm a tenant, as if I have some agreement with them. And they're going to the town court, and they're filing an eviction notice. And I want to make you aware of this so that you know. You do it, and I'll call the sheriff, and I'll get the affidavit to the sheriff. And we'll get you on the phone, too, maybe at the same time. We'll talk to them. And just serve notice to him and see how he responds to that.
Okay. In the meantime, Don, I don't want to take up time because there's a lot of other people online, but I would really like to get back on that Tuesday call because there are other things that I need
Me
to
Me too,
discuss.
Yes. We're trying hard to do this, and once we have someone solidified into the position that I had, to be able to take on the responsibilities that I was taking on that I just can't do no more because I'm too busy other places. Once we work that out, and we're very close, I think, then we're going to open things back up, and we're going to try to move things very quickly, and we'll discuss on a Tuesday call. So let's hope we'll be able to do it next Tuesday. Maybe next Monday I'll make the announcement we're going to have the meeting on Tuesday. I'm going to shoot for that.
Also, because you know, someone went to our court in Brooklyn, and they have never filed any of the papers that we filed. Not even mine. Never mind mine. Everybody's
right.
Papers have not been filed.
Well, we sent you the papers, I believe, with the certified papers with the paper, and you've got that, so you know it's been served, and now that's another problem, and we're going to deal with those problems later. But you know, again, let's just try to do what we can to prevent your home from being taken by dealing with the sheriff at this point. Meanwhile, we're going to be dealing with the other side of things as soon as we move closer into the courts. You know, we got to get the sheriffs on board with us, and bear in mind, you know, down there, with the exception of your county, because we have to go into another county because we're going into where Brooklyn, I think, is where the court is, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't have a sheriff down there in Brooklyn. But look it, you're in your county. That sheriff is responsible.
That sheriff is in so much trouble.
Yeah, I know. A lot of them are down there because they're so lost and far from understanding anything on how
the chief of police is arrested. He's in jail.
Well, he belongs there, I'm sure. Probably.
Yeah. Anyway, all right. So I'll try to put together that affidavit.
Make it simple so that the sheriff can understand it.
That I haven't had due process.
Right, that you have not been taken into court for them to take that house away from you and to change ownership of the papers. That whole thing is a fraud. And since they haven't done that, there's been no due process in order to have that done. How can they then just go change the paperwork and magically change the paperwork, call themselves the owners of the property and call you a tenant and that's renting from them, a renter, and then go into a town court and have you dispossessed as a renter? You own that home. They're stealing it from you.
Well, we know that.
Boy, well, that's what you want to write in your paper.
God, I hope I get it right. I should have written this down as you were saying it.
Well, you can come back and listen to it. This is just
yes,
look at
I
the.
Will.
It's almost. It's 11:23. You could figure out where on the call this is at.
Yeah. I'll do that and listen.
It'll
to
be
it
posted
again.
Tonight or tomorrow morning. Probably tonight.
Okay. All right. All right, John. Thank you very much.
And we'll try to shoot for a Tuesday meeting. You know, I want to get back to that, and I'm going to pass it over to someone, and then I'll be called in when necessary. But we need to get something going there.
Yeah,
but I'll be at the first one. I'll be at the first meeting.
What was her name? Priscilla from Connecticut. What's her name? She's done. I don't know what she's done. I didn't quite get what she's trying to share with everybody.
It wasn't Priscilla, but I remember. I think that was. Crystal.
Not
Crystal.
It's Crystal.
Crystal.
Yeah.
Crystal. Right.
Yes. Yeah. You know, you should tie in with Crystal and talk with her. Crystal. Well, let's see. Why don't you put your? You want to put your phone number out there for Crystal to call, or your email?
No, Crystal. I have Crystal's phone number.
Oh. Okay. All right.
Yeah, I have Crystal's phone number, but you know, when the last time I spoke to her, she said to me to go bankrupt, and that just didn't fit my picture at all. You know, it just
right.
So she was in a different place. If she's discovered something new that one can use,
yeah, give her a call because I think she has.
Yeah, I do too. Yep, that's right.
Okay, all right.
Thank you,
all
Mom.
Right. Right. Well. Thank you, guys. I hope it helped other people, you know, at least this business of the jurisdiction issue, you know.
Right.
Maud,
yes.
you got one hope, Maud, that all these guys are going to be in jail before they evict you. Nobody's going to be able to come and evict you. They're all going to be in jail.
Amen.
It seems like they're fighting each other to get in there.
Yeah, well, it's very bad out here. Very, very bad. Very bad.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much, boss. We're going to move
to
the next
call. Thank you, gentlemen. Yes, please. My own.
Have a good night, and it's always good to hear from you.
Okay, thank you.
Sex cluster, you've been unmuted. It looks like Harley. Vermont Harley.
Hello.
Hey, how's it going?
Yeah, it's remember me, Gerard. We talked. Yeah.
Oh, is that Jan?
Can you hear me very well?
Your bandwidth is like...
This is hard.
Go ahead. Talk.
Okay. I'm going to try to talk clearly here. So I sent in an appeal to the Supreme Court. We have a kind of county by county superior court system here, the one that I got kicked around in. And I also sent everything to my sheriff with a very tight note just asking if he'd heard of the NLA and that I'm sure we would talk again soon, but I wanted him to be updated. And, you know, the things I wrote might end up being of some use to other people, and I will post it, but I'm going to wait until the card comes back that they're certified that they've got it.
Right.
I had another question about that, too. Are we going to have a process to check in with the sheriffs to make sure that they got all that stuff that you guys sent them?
We are kind of doing that. Bear in mind, there are 3,000 plus sheriffs, but we're going to try to do what we can to communicate with as many of them as we possibly can. Okay.
Fuck you. Yeah.
And look, We're working
on the district leadership. Hang on one second, because we got some feedback coming from you. So hang on a second. But I'll unmute you in a second, because when I'm talking, I'm hearing feedback. But anyway, one of the things we are doing is we're working with district leaders, and with those district leaders, we're looking to fulfill the 90 districts that we're dealing with within the 50 states. And those leaders right now are checking in all the courts and making sure that the papers have been filed. In most cases, they haven't, and nobody knows where they're at. So they're doing affidavits, and that's going to be the beginning of us preparing for crimes that we're going to go after these chief judges and chief clerks on. Because that's, for the chief judge involved with it and knowledgeable and telling the clerk to do whatever it is that they did with the paperwork, because we know the clerk didn't do it on their own. Once we can prove that, of course, and I'm sure the clerk's going to say that in order to get a lesser sentence, because we're going after them at some point in time. And, that's 20 years potentially for the judge and 3 years for the chief clerk. For removing, mutilating, or burying, covering up, or, whatever, any kind of paperwork. They have to file it. That's the law. Now, with that said and done, that's what's laying aside right now. But we also are looking to start talking with all of these sheriffs, through faxes particularly, and moving them closer and closer into working with us to start to do some arrests on these judges and different individuals that just refuse the common law. But that's going to take time. Now, the district leaders, there's 94 districts, but 90 of them are in the state. So those district leaders, we're going to start working with them. One of their projects is to start communicating with these sheriffs. So let's take, for instance, in New York, there are 4 districts. In Oregon, there's 1 district. Now, Oregon's 1 district, I think they have 35 sheriffs. In New York, we have 4 districts, and we have 62 sheriffs. Less actually 7, because 7 counties have done away with sheriffs, and we're going to deal with that too. But nevertheless, the point is the people involved in those districts working with the state leadership, we got state coordinators, and working even with the county organizers, trying to work together as a group. We want them to start communicating with sheriffs and relaying the information in a collective way across the whole nation. So we'll be doing the same thing with all of the sheriffs at the same time. But of course, that's going to require an organization working together to get this job done. And that's going to take a little time. It might really take 30 days to really work it to the process where all the sheriffs have had contact with people within their states and are on in the process of understanding better what we're doing and becoming educated and preparing for protecting we the people, because we have a lot of other problems coming down on us, and we're going to be depending on the sheriff and the militia to do what they have to do to protect our liberties. So, anyway, let me unmute you now.
I get that.
Go ahead. You're unmuted now.
Just a quick follow-up on that. Great. I've spoken with my state person here, and we're very thin in the southern part of the state, and so I put myself out there as I owned in hand to organize.
Yeah, we're kind of losing you, breaking up.
Just to make sure that they're on board or not, and Can you hear me well?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Just saying I would contribute to that process and hope maybe
see who's on board. Yeah, well, you're starting to break up again. How are you calling in? You calling in through the browser? You're probably calling in through your browser, right? You might want to try. Yeah, you are. I see a headset there. You're probably going to want to try next time to call in through the phone, because for some of us, if you don't have the broadband and you don't have a good connection, you know, you might want to talk with your cable company. But if you can get a better connection, that'll work better. But if not, the phone will work a lot better for you, and we'll be able to understand you better. But going back to working with others, that's exactly what we need people to do. We need everybody to get involved, even if you can only involve yourself an hour a month or an hour a week. Just get involved. I mean, put some time into this process to help all of us do what has to be done, and that is, at this point, making contact with sheriffs, which is the next part of the project coming up. Okay?
To give a couple of resources to people, there's a lot going on in Britain right now, resisting mortgage fraud and evictions. And one of them is a case called Tom Crawford. And he was on his roof today being dragged off after going through many, many different court battles. And another gentleman I learned a lot about natural law from was Michael Obernicia. Michael Obernicia, and you can look those up on Facebook or just the web, and they're just incredible. So I'll end with that.
Okay, thank you very much. And yes, this is a worldwide phenomena. It's not just us. It's everybody, and everybody's watching us too. So this is a world phenomena. This is, you know, the world watches us. Okay. We have, what do we have here? I don't see them unmuted.
980. Listen, yeah, they're unmuted. But do you have? Did you click on Q&A, the down button, so that you can see all the people in line? Do you know what I'm talking about?
But it doesn't, you know, I got 10.
But if you look to the right of their name, they're in red right now with a little question or voice box above their head, but whatever that is. But
yeah,
you can
right.
see that next to them, they're unmuted. There's no cross on their speakers.
Yeah. Okay, so it's 857 is the area code. You've been unmuted.
No, it's not. It's 980.
No, I have 857. 1336 is the last four.
Well, one of them needs to talk to find out who.
I got two people here with those little bubbles over their heads.
Yeah, I don't know why.
I don't know. Craziness. I mean, I'm on the little panel. I don't know. The big panel's
got... Oh, yeah, you need to get to the big panel on the web.
I'm on the big panel, too, but I don't see that.
Okay, if you click on web control, you got the web controls open?
Yeah, I got it up.
Okay, you see Q&A? Click on Q&A down button. Right next to the Q&A. Just click on Q&A.
Hang on. Let me move this stupid thing out of the way. Okay.
Click on Q&A, and then everyone that's in Q&A should be seen. There's one person on the top with the little, I'll call it a little flag, you know, a little cartoon, you know, box.
Okay. You know what? I was on page number 8. That's why.
Okay. 980. That's where we're at.
Yep, gotcha. You're unmuted, 980, but I don't know, they're not there. They didn't talk yet.
3519, you're unmuted.
They fell asleep waiting for us.
Okay, go to the next call then.
Okay, gotcha. Okay, Iowa Richard, you've been unmuted.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yeah. Yeah, you're going to have to. Do you have a headset?
Let me turn this thing down. Can you talk? I'm not sure I can hear you now.
Yeah, I can hear you. You're actually coming in very loud.
Okay. I think we're all right now. This is Richard with the Common Law Advisory Committee, and
okay.
We reviewed the document information to sheriffs, and we made corrections, but they weren't accepted by a writing group, and I determined a couple of things. Seems like you writers don't know the purpose of quotations. Would you agree that quotation marks mean you are copying the original word for word? Do you agree with that usage?
Yes, quotation marks is word for word. It's absolutely.
Okay. Well, the writers don't appear to know that because in Cooper versus Aaron, they put quotations around the quote, but it's not to be found in the document. And another thing was that when you quote a court opinion, you do not quote the headnotes, which are not the court's opinion, but are written by Westlaw or Lexis or FindLaw, etc. They're just a summary. Did you know that?
Say that again now, when you're quoting.
When you quote a court opinion,
yeah.
You do not quote the headnotes. The head notes
well,
are
generally,
not
the, most of our quotes that we use come mostly from Black's Law, because when you look into Black's Law and we look things up, we discover all kinds of Supreme Court rulings that we can use. But we do have other Supreme Court rulings we've collected over the years that we've used, and usually if there's a separation in place, we'll put dot, dot, dot in there so we know that there's something in between that we didn't put in to tie two or three or four points inside that paper. But look, a lot of this is using to support what we're talking about and the positions that really is coming out of the Supreme Court, even when it's a dissenting opinion. It can be used also to make a point. But go ahead.
Yeah, so, but if you're using Black's, so that's another story. I'm just saying that when you're actually quoting a court opinion, like Cooper versus Aaron, the company like Westlaw or Lexis or FindLaw, they'll summarize what could be a very lengthy opinion on the top of it, and it's called the headnotes. So it's a very useful summary, but you don't want to quote the headnotes because that's not the court's opinion, and it could be different to some extent from what the court actually said. And that actually, I discovered that actually happened in the document that you just put out, the information to sheriffs, and
okay.
Also the same.
Which, and that was, what was the quote?
Okay.
Cool.
Yeah, hold on.
Because I think there was a quote that someone sent in, it may have been you, and we did make a correction on one of them. And also there was a reference really given a meaning of a word or something, but that we didn't give the source.
Well, I have that open here somewhere. Let's see. So, unfortunately, I think.
Well, you know what? Why don't we do this? Why don't you get a hold of Gary, and let's try to get a private conversation. We'll try to hook in with Linda, and if you want to work with her to give more accuracy on quotes, that would be good. You know,
what
we did have a guy that was doing this for us, and he had checked a lot of the quotes out. So a lot of the quotes we're using, they have already been checked out. But not all of them have been totally checked out by, other sources, by other people. So if you want to do that for us, that would be a good, it would really help us.
Yeah. So what was his name? I didn't catch that.
Get a hold of Gary. He's one of the national leaders. You just send him an email, Gary@national.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, Gary worked with me. He actually sent me the
file. Well, then get a hold of him and ask him to connect you with Linda and have a conversation with Linda. And so when I send the work to be checked over by Linda, because Linda checks off all of the English and, the periods and all the punctuation and stuff, while she's doing that, she could send you a copy, and you can be checking out the quotations.
Yeah, I did that. We did. First of all, I worked with Gary, and he said he tried to get my work submitted to the writers group, and they just would not accept it. He was battling with them.
Yeah, but what I'm saying, we did take some of your thoughts, and we did make a couple of changes, not necessarily so much in the punctuation side, but we did make some changes on one of the quotes, and also you know, there was a place where we were just giving a meaning of a phrase or a word, and we didn't really give the source. I'm not sure exactly how we ended up dealing with that. But again, you need to connect on with us a little earlier on. So if we send papers over to Linda, and then you and Linda, there's a connection, she can always make sure you can get a copy, and then you can get back to us with quotation corrections if that's necessary.
Okay, click the bad link here.
So in other words, you'd get them before we released them is what he's saying.
Right, and we'll make the corrections.
Right.
Well, there was very little time. Gary gave it to me. We spent 6 hours on it, and we turned it over to him. That was all the time we had. And we did find...
find ourselves, when we're doing papers, we're always under the wire here, you know, under the pressure. And so when we do papers, it has to be responded to quickly because we are trying to get them out quick. I mean, we don't want to send out papers that are incorrect either. But we do need people to respond quickly. And if you want to work with us, we're happy to have you to run checks on these things.
Yeah, we did that, but they were not accepted. Anyway,
we're going to bypass everything. You're going directly to me and Linda. Okay, because I get the final work, get it done, and then I get it over to Linda for final cleanup. And that's when we can check quotes out, and we can correct the quotes right there and then.
So when I'm done with my work, who should I send it to? Send it to Linda?
Well, once you get a conversation with Linda, and I talk with Linda often, so I'll be talking with her tomorrow. She's listening in tonight anyway, so she'll be prepared for you. The thing is when you get a quote that you find that there's a concern about, you can get the corrected quote to her, and then we can get maybe a three-way conversation on it or something of that nature before we finalize it with inside the document.
Okay, and her email is linda@nationallibertyalliance.org.
Right, and she, you know, just give her your phone number and or make a connection with Gary, and Gary will make a conference call with you and her, and you can exchange information at that point, or you can send her an email and exchange information by email and then connect with her on the phone.
Okay, will do. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Richard. Uh-huh. Try to get these last few people in here as we only got a few minutes left. Okay, you've been unmuted there. 737 is your area code.
Yeah, I am Jason from Texas.
Jason from Texas, good to have you. What's up?
So I had a question about the, y'all talking about the jurisdiction earlier and challenging jurisdiction. And I've tried it before in a case, and I almost won. It was a phone case for suspension of a license from the ALR hearings that they give you. Even though I beat the DWI, they still were trying to suspend me for refusing the breathalyzer. And I was all the way up until the point, and I challenged jurisdiction, and this was all over the phone. I had mailed in the affidavit and a form I found online for challenging jurisdiction. So I filled out the form with all the same information for my case and sent it to them. And then as I was going through it, I told them, you know, I don't believe they have jurisdiction and all the reasons why. And then all of a sudden they called my name. They said, I hereby called Jason, you know, Walker. And then when I answered to my name, they said I gave them jurisdiction. And the thing is that they both said, the judge and the state attorney both said, you almost had it. You almost had it. That's the closest anybody has come to it until you... answer to your name, then you.
Well, I hope you get a recording of that because that's a fraud.
Yeah, well, I don't know. It was old. It was a while back, and that's why it reminded me of it when y'all were talking about jurisdiction, because there's another case that I'm going to try to fight jurisdiction in as well. But I'm worried that the same thing is going to happen. They're going to call my name, or if I walk across the threshold.
Well, you could say, here I am, I'm here on special appearance to test, you know, the jurisdiction.
I can't believe they're actually playing that game in open court.
But like you said, that was a while ago. But,
That's pretty funny. Yeah.
But, and then the state attorney even told me don't look up contract law. This is how we got it.
What they just did, though, is admitted to fraud.
Right.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
The admittance of fraud.
In their open court, even though it's an Nisi Prius court, it has no power to fine or incarcerate. They do it all day long anyway, and the sheriff backs them up, and again, it's all about ignorance.
Yeah. Well, so then what do I, even if I am able to get that recording, how do I enforce it? I got to take it to a federal court?
Well, at that point, you can sue them in a federal court for violating your right of due process and for fraud and a lot of other things. But you have to have a cause to go into the federal court. And, you know, you go, and again, so it has to be a violation of an unalienable right. So, and due process is how I would get in there. To the federal court.
That's good info.
But, sure. You know, then again, now you got to know a whole new game because you're in a whole new world and you got to go, you know, you got to be able to feel confident to go in there and be a little bold and be strong with your paperwork and then understand what's really going on, you know, and that it's an education.
Yeah, I've been trying to educate myself on it a lot because I have another case coming up that they keep trying to serve me. And that's my other question, too, that they don't have jurisdiction until they serve you. And so I've basically avoided them for over a year. And the last time I avoided them, they dismissed the case. But then they reopened the case again this year. And they've been trying to serve me. And they weren't able to serve me again this time. So as far as I know, no judgment has been entered because I don't see a judgment on my credit for child support or anything like that. So I think they keep dropping the case because they can't serve me. My question about that, too, is when they try to serve me, can I say no when they ask if I'm Jason Walker? Can I legally say no without being arrested or?
Well, that would be a lie. So you don't want to do that because you're not going to be blessed for that to begin with.
Well, my understanding is that that name is owned by the United States.
That's
so
right. Yes, you talk about the old cap name.
Yeah, but again,
I'm not the name. I'm
yeah, but
the
all
human
of that
body.
is a fraud. You're now dealing with their fraud and playing in their game. You know, look at you don't want to use their side for one thing and then not for the other thing. Either you're going to go into their court or you're not going to go into the court, and get to simplicity. A fraud is a fraud, and that's it. There's nothing else to talk about. I don't need to talk about anything else with the fact that it's a fraud and they have no authority. They are, a Nisi Prius court in the cases of what you're talking about, these courts that deal with this. It's all Nisi Prius. And they don't have authority. And when they play their games of fraud, you don't want to play back with them.
So I should just take the papers and then go to court
At that point, you're stuck. Well, yeah. I don't go to court on those cases anymore. I just send my papers in, and I don't challenge anything. I let them know they don't have jurisdiction, and they go through a certain process, say a few things, this, that, the other thing. And sometimes it works, and sometimes it doesn't. When it doesn't work, then I end up just paying the fine, and I stick it in a file, and when I have time one day, I'm going to sue them all.
Listen, you don't have to answer them. That's the Fifth Amendment. You don't have to say anything.
Yeah.
Oh, you mean when they ask who he is?
Point to your, open your mouth and point it to your throat and go, That's all.
Yeah, so I guess then if I don't answer, then...
You don't have to answer because you're going to incriminate yourself. So just keep your mouth shut.
Yeah. But then legally they won't be serving me if I don't say anything. That's how I see it.
Well, unless they want to tackle you and take a blood sample and get your DNA or something, I don't know. I should shut up. I'd be giving them ideas.
But you know, if things keep going the way it is, that'll be next. I mean, they're already allowed to pull out blood for.
Well, the banks are already doing that. You know, they're taking fingerprints. I remember last time I went in with a check to a bank and to get a $50 check. I had an ID. It was where the bank was drawn off of, and I went in there to cash it, and they wanted my fingerprint. I told them they were crazy. I said, "You want my DNA too?" You know?
Yeah,
but
my bank does that too.
I'm not giving them my fingerprint.
Yeah. Yeah, I would get it. That's crazy, though. They shouldn't,
They do. They're not allowed. They do whatever they can get away with. You could sue them and win on that case, but maybe not in these courts again because they own the courts, you know? So, anyway, we should move on.
Yeah. We got a couple of couple of minutes. Thanks a lot there. Okay, let's see. 857 area code. You've been unmuted.
Hello. I'm new. I've I'm not very good with speaking, so I'm going to try my best and stay focused here. Well, the reason I'm calling is because I actually had a question about a case that I may be looking into taking into federal court because of some of the things that involves and some of the people involved. I don't want to say too much about it other than perhaps maybe some surface level stuff. But you were talking about necessarily having to have a violation of unalienable rights in order to take a case into federal court. Now, I would think that the Sixth Amendment, the Eighth Amendment, as well as a violation of my 19th Amendment as well, in addition to violation of due process. How can I put this? Well, I was essentially had punishment inflicted upon me without due process, which I would also consider to be excessive force because of what I was being supposedly charged with. But basically, I'm at a point right now where the disposition of my case is that of, well, basically, if I'm in the wrong place at the wrong time and I get spotted by the wrong person, I'm looking at potentially being thrown in jail for 90 days for supposedly being in violation of a court order to stay away from a place that I had every right to be there. Now, without going too much into a side note, when it comes to, personal property and whatnot, I believe that, when it comes to the property manager, or the property owner, has every right to say who can be on and off their property, so on and so forth. I get that. However, the property in question, they only own the building. Now, can they actually really, not only that, the First Amendment also says that I have the right to peaceably assemble. Now, if I'm peaceably assembled, I'm not causing any problems. I have every right to stand where I was standing, and yet, because I'm poor, well, that's why I was, dealt with the way that I was dealt with, I guess you could say. At least that was part of it. But as far as actually, really getting this together, I understand also that we really only have the best defense that we can afford. And
is there a restraining order against you from someone, and you happen to be on a piece of property and close
that's what the court is saying. Yes, but
okay.
Now at this point,
so you're in a public place, and mm-hmm. What do you work there or something?
No, I'm going to be straight with you. I'm not proud of it, but I was panhandling.
Mm-hmm.
Which is I have the understanding that it is a constitutionally protected activity. Is that not so?
Well, look, let's get back to the original question is
okay.
How to get it into a federal court, right?
Right.
So you have to find a way to find a violation of your unalienable rights to get it there. If you read Article 3, Section 2 of the U.S. Constitution, it says the judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity arising under this Constitution, the laws of the United States, and the treaties made or which shall be made under their authority. Okay, so you have to get a constitutional violation. Now, the question is who's violating your unalienable rights? In this case, it's a court, right?
Well,
they're saying
yes,
you can't be at a certain place, and you're at that certain place. Why are you at that certain place? I mean, you kind of was told to stay away from there for one reason or another, but you went there anyway, or what?
Well, let's see. Okay, so this is a little bit of a complex thing, too, because I now have multiple cases with docket numbers.
Well, the end result is 90 days in jail or a fine or something, or what?
Yeah, whereas the original charge carried only 30 days.
Your big argument with them would be jurisdiction. They don't have it. You challenge the jurisdiction. You say basically that they don't have the authority over you because they're a nisi prius court. They're going to, frown upon that anyway. But the bottom line is you can't get due process there. Go say, where is the grand jury, Because I have
not only that, I haven't even had the opportunity to answer for the charges, and I was effectively blocked from doing so by my court-appointed attorney.
Right. Well, I don't know that you're going to get it. Look, it's an uphill battle, and you need an education to fight in the courts. If you don't have the education to do it, you're kind of stuck, and you got to figure a way to just keep yourself out of jail is the key thing.
Yeah, I get that, and honestly, like I've been doing a lot of research, and I'm beginning to get a grasp of the whole concept of legalese and so on. But really, what I'm trying to get at is like. Like, what do I need to know about the actual process of initiating that?
I don't understand. The process of initiating what?
Okay, so, like, how do I even go about opening this case? Like, if I'm going to sue them, like,
Again, you know, you don't know how things work, and that was our big problem in the beginning. It took us quite some time to figure that out. But if you go up to nationallibertyalliance.org, and you search around up there, you'll find a lot of stuff. We wrote a book on court access and motions and all these different things that are used in the court, how to fill out the paper, what's necessary to fill out to get in to make it easy. Again, the only thing necessary is an affidavit. But then bear in mind a lot of that. Now, you have to go to a common law. We have the courses on common law up there that was put out by Bill Thornton. But you know, he's given us a lot of stuff. We built upon his work. He's done a lot of great work. We differ in a position that the king of the court. I'm not the king of the court. God is the king of the court, and that's Amen. The position we have to go in on. Bill Thornton has a different position on that. But in any event, it is our court from the standpoint we are the sovereign in the court. We're bringing an issue into the court unless they're bringing it against us. And if they're bringing it against us, the question gets, you know, is this a valid a charge against us? Is there a grand jury indictment? If there's no grand jury indictment, hey, you don't have to answer nothing. But, of course, they're going to deny that. It's an uphill battle. So now you have to know how to fight it. They're not going to give you anything, and you have to fight every step of the way, and you can't argue with them. You make one statement in court, and you give them a writ of error. You have to understand how to do that. And then they're going to do something else, and then you're going to send to them not only the writ of error, you're going to send them you're going to sue them in another court, which would be the federal court, for violating your right of due process and hijacking you into a foreign court. And now those people are all removed. Because you got to go after the prosecutor, you got to go after the judge, and even your court-appointed attorney maybe, but you violate all them and you bring them into the federal court. They now have to accuse themselves from the case, and someone else has to come in, and you got to get ready to give them a writ of error, and they got to step back. And if they don't, you bring them into the court. You'll be bringing a lot of people up to the federal courts. But now you're in a whole big new ball game there. You know, you got the paperwork that you want to deny. You got the funds that they want you to give, $400. You have to deny that. Otherwise, you're right back into the same court, and they're going to rule on their side and throw you out of there. Okay. And then you have to make that judge a little nervous about what you're going to do to him. And really what they're going to do is they're going to say, is this worth it, guys? Why don't you just get rid of the case on the other end and see what happens?
Well,
and if they do, you know, you're not going to do nothing. You'll walk away.
Okay, well, you said a writ of hurry, and a writ of error.
Go ahead, Gerard. You broke up, Gerard. Try it again.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead. Try it again.
Can you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you.
Oh, okay. Look, he's got to learn how to write the cases because... And you've got to figure out what his time is worth. You know, sometimes it's not worth all the time and effort for the charge. And if you can write papers, then you can drag them out and they'll want to get rid of you because you're wasting their time. You know what I mean? And that's your victory right there. But you got to be able to put the paperwork in yourself. You know, you're not paying a lawyer. So anyway, I want to move on.
It's an education. It's not simple for what you're trying to do. You know, but do everything you can to keep yourself out of jail. Whatever it is you got to do, then do it. Even if it's paying a fine or whatever, or admitting to their game or anything. Look, your key thing is to stay out of jail until we get to the other side of justice. Because right now we're in the side of injustice.
Hear that?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. P.A. Mary, you've been unmuted. Go ahead. Hello, Mary, are you there? Hello, hello. Next one is Valerie. PA, I think I'm not on here anymore.
No, you're here.
Oh, okay. Go ahead, Mary, you're on. I don't hear her.
All right, well, we're at the end of our program anyway, so.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not responding, so we might as well end. Sorry about that. Just going to get Valerie, but she's.
Okay, let's thanks everyone for joining us, and Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday. And, of course, there is a meeting on Wednesday for all those who want to come and get involved in working with the district leaders, become a district leader. Get to that meeting on Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time right here in this room. And other than that, we'll see you on Monday. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Have a good night. Let me get something here. I lost it. Okay, here it is.